Doug's the boss.
Doug's the new boss?
Well, he's the temporary boss until Tim gets back. He's sick.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, don't touch anything.
Okay, so a lot of these slides we'll just scroll through. I'm not going to read everything to you because you can read.
Yep.
Right? So when you want to stop and discuss, just stop me and discuss me. Okay, here we go. Just a little history in case you didn't know. Rock County Fair.
Now we know.
Now you know. And as you guys know, Fair Board, 9 volunteers. You guys appoint them.
Are we getting many applications for the, or did we field the other one? One application for the open spot?
Yeah. So just a quick, why the fair's the third full weekend in August, and it's mainly because the processing plants from the livestock sale can't take all the surrounding counties and ours at the same time. Right. So we all work together, and ours happens to be the third full weekend, and we have the biggest livestock sale, and the processing plants don't really like to take any other fairs when ours is coming their way. So
even though we ship them down to Mount Rose or Florida?
That was just this year, and you know why. So
we're all good.
Yeah, that, as you know, is coming through the pipe. So anyway, so 2020, those are the dates. This is the barn dance last year. So event activity and selection, just a quick how we go about deciding what we're going to do for the fair. In August, obviously, we have the fair. In September, we get together at the fair board meeting. We have a debriefing about the whole schedule, what worked, what didn't, anything major that happened, didn't happen. And we talk about how we can do better in the future. Starting in October, we start with last year's schedule, and we build from that. Do we want to keep doing stuff, take stuff off? What do we want to do? December through January is when we really start getting into the financials, because most of our receivables and payables through about then. And then January, our schedule should be mostly complete. January through February, which is where we're at right now, we're developing budgets for each event and activity. And we go through the previous year's actuals, how those worked, and then the budgets. And the fair board members, each fair board member is really in charge of an event or an activity. And so they're in charge of giving me a budget for that event or activity. And that's how that normally works. And then the fair board looks at that. Then we also get our sponsorship and advertising drive going. Come March, all the event budgets are due to me. And then in April, we look through all of those budgets with the sponsorships that we have for sure or not. And we decide at that point, okay, we have money, we're going to move forward with this, or we don't have enough money, we're not doing it, or we think we can get it, we're moving forward. So that's how that works. And then even up until fair time, if something's just not going to happen, it's not going to happen. So for 2020, we did so many big things for so long. We're trying to kind of go back to some basics, back to our history a little bit. So what we're adding this year, a Power Wheels Derby. Boulder County does it in El Paso. They get these kids in Power Wheels. They put a balloon on the front and the back. So if the balloon pops, if your balloons pop, you're out. But I've already had a huge response from people wanting to do
these
this.
Electric cars or pedal cars?
Those electric cars.
Battery. They can't hurt themselves, can they?
No. Well, and I have all, we'll have Eric look over the waiver and everything. El Paso, Boulder County does it.
And they have to wear helmets, right?
They have to wear helmets, yes.
All right.
Most definitely.
I'm thinking Clark's right now.
And they...
I don't know if he can reach the pedals and the steering wheel at the same time. He's pretty small. Although he did ski all the way down Vagabond all by himself this weekend. So.
And there's no retrofitting of Power Wheels. It has to be all stock. They can paint it or whatever, but they can't put any nitrous or turbo or anything like that on there.
Good. Cars. That's a good choice.
Yeah, that's good choice. A good choice. And it'll
everybody
be...
brings their own?
They got to bring their own.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yep, they've got to be in their own. Unless we get some that are donated, we're going to ask for those in case there's people that need some. Mainly a fun event and to get people in our midway. We're going to do that.
And it doesn't destroy
night.
Them like the other derby.
Correct.
So that's
correct.
Probably...
Exactly.
You can reuse them.
Exactly.
That's adorable, and I'm in full support.
It'll be so fun.
Don't tell Eric.
And I... And then...
I really want to need to tell Eric.
No, no, don't tell Eric that I support it.
And then we're also going to do a bunch of just these interactive stations. I went to Old MacDonald Farm in South Dakota this last summer with my grandkids. They had so many fun things at their fall harvest that would... Simple, easy, cheap, and you didn't have to have a bunch of people. And so, like the tic-tac-toe table, a bubble station. We're going to build some cornhole boards. People can just give them something to do while they're hanging out. The little miniature golf. You can see my cute little grandson right there playing golf. But it was so simple, just boards, and we can easily get somebody to sponsor that, we think. The sandbox was a huge hit at the bonfire last year. These photo boards. You can see me and my husband in South Dakota. But just stuff like that. And we're also turning those into marketing things with our hashtag and all that. People can take them, share them. And then we're going to do an egg toss during the poultry show. And we're working with Parks and Wildlife to do a fishing derby. So that's some of the stuff we're trying to get back to that's easier, cheaper, easily sponsored, and really gets people involved as opposed to coming and buying a ticket to see something.
Fishing derby where?
It would be at Dry Creek Park. Pond. If we can get Parks and Wildlife to help us out with that one. And the town would allow us.
Depends where we let them build their...
Is there right? Fish in there?
What's that?
Is there fish in there?
They stock it every year before Huck Finn Day. Yeah. And then they put an aerator in a few years ago when I was still there to try to keep them alive during the summer. Okay. Funding for the fair. Sponsorships are a big part of our fair, as you can see, in 2019. We had almost $30,000 in sponsorships, a little over 15 in in-kind donations, which without those, a lot of stuff we wouldn't be able to do. And, of course, advertising in the fair book, banners. We charge fees for participating in a lot of the events. We charge fees for camping and our vendors and, of course, the general fund. This year, in 2020, we've added a level, the diamond level, you can see, at $5,000, mainly because the platinum sponsorship at $3,000 used to be the thing. We could only get a handful of people that would spend that kind of money. Last year, we had 10. So in order to keep that level of sponsorship more elite, and we are running out of room on the front of our fair book and the back of our T-shirts, and some of our sponsors are already giving us over $4,000. Hill Petroleum gives us $6,000. So we just decided we're going to move it up a notch and see where we're at. And to make that more elite once again. Everything else stays the same. We just added one on top. We'll see what the response is on that. And this is just an example of our budgets and our actuals. This is what I give to the fair board. For the budgets, we give them a blank sheet like this. But this is how the 2019 Derby panned out. Any questions?
Yeah, so...
Does that make sense?
So revenue was 17 and...
So, yes. Revenue was $17,000 just in entries
and the sponsorship
and
was tickets. Six, and then the
correct.
Expenses were... 11,000?
Mm-hmm. So cash balance, net balance was 11,000, 11.5. And I'll explain the cost plus 20 here in a minute. And the Derby actually helps fund a lot of our other events and activities that don't see black. And the Fair Board has agreed to that. I mean, they know, like Home Arts is always in the red, although we're getting better about getting more sponsorships for Home Arts. The Fair Board has agreed that that is a program they're willing to use Derby funds to underwrite, basically, because it's so huge and so important.
Do you track, I assume you track all this like in a spreadsheet?
Yes.
And I assume this is the kind of thing we could track with project grant accounting?
Yeah, I would definitely think.
Just for clarification, just to understand.
Well, and it's all in Munis, but Munis doesn't get down to this level as far as activities and stuff.
That's the question I was asking, is that this new module that we're looking at implementing would do that, which is why
it's the chart of accounts and the module.
The chart of accounts and the module.
Yeah, it just gets down one more line item, basically.
Okay. Jill just said it would save her some time. Did we all hear that?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think she's alone in that saving of time.
Just for the record.
Just for the record. So here is the event-specific cost and revenue, including in-kind. So you can see the actuals of each of the events and activities that we did. Then the actual and cost plus 20. Our rule is if the fair board or if I'm going to put on an event, the rule is you have to cover your costs plus 20%, and that helps cover all the other costs, the trash, the porta potties, all those other items. So that's what that 20% is about. And then we like to add on in-kind because it's valuable, and we need to recognize what some of these people are giving us.
And is in-kind primarily man-hours, or are there other types of in-kind donations that...
Well, like Wagner donates a skid steer to us every year and light plants, which retail value is... I ask them, anybody that gives us anything in-kind, I ask them what the retail value would be, and that's the in-kind value that I put on that.
And is that... So this includes man-hours as well as those kinds of things?
Correct. Okay. Exactly. It's both.
So the green column... Mm-hmm.
That's actual money.
Revenue?
Revenue or...
Revenue minus expenses?
It's net. Oh. That's net.
Okay, so the green's
that's
net.
Net
okay.
plus or minus, okay. Yes. And so you see, like, the home arts. This year we were down, which we normally are down a little bit, but this year it was even more because we had to print out the entry tags, which we only do every 3 to 4 years, and that's about a $2,000 expenditure. So we won't see that again for another 3 or 4 years.
So I'm confused here now, too, then. So yeah, actuals, that's... So for Adopt a Pig, the net was $930?
Correct.
So what's the other column?
Yeah,
$690.
That's where I was...
So that's the actual...
Is that how much you want that event to generate?
So Adopt a Pig, no. So expenses were $1,200. We got $1,200 in sponsorships. We took in $930 in revenue. So there was a balance of $930 actual net cash. But then if you add that 20% cost, take that off of what the actual cash is, then we're down to $690. So that's the 20% to help cover the other costs.
So you subtracted 20%,
yes,
in order to get that
correct
middle column.
Correct. Whatever the cost is plus 20, and then you know.
So
we have
how
to take
much
that
was
away.
The actual cost for Adopt a Pig?
Actual expenses. Here, I made you guys copies of these if you want them.
Well, I'm just, for instance, that one. I don't know what even.
So Adopt a Pig. Our expenses were $1,200 because we had to buy pigs. That was the expense. Okay. But we also got $1,200 in sponsorship, and then we charged people to enter the Adopt a Pig contest, so that revenue was $930.
So the net was $930.
The net actual cash was $930.
And so if you take out the 20% overhead, if you want to call it that, then you're at $690 that generated? Is that kind of how you're thinking about
it? Yep, that would be minus overhead. That would be a good way to look at it. Here is, if you want to look at, this has each of them.
Yeah.
If you want to look at those.
Yeah, we had this.
Yeah, I think you gave this to us last year.
Yeah, this is this year's.
This is this year's. Yep.
So the actual cash in hand is actuals. And then the 20% to see what we actually, to help cover the other costs, that's what that is. So home arts, inflatables, which is the bounce houses and those kinds of things, we lost money on those things. Normally, mutton busting, even in actuals,
say what?
Would not
inflatables.
Be
what that? That's
the bounce houses.
Oh yeah.
Because you're not charging anybody to use them.
No, we have sponsors for those for the 2 free days. Mm-hmm. So we get $4,000 in sponsorship, but it costs us a little over $4,000, and that's one of those things where the fair board is willing to use money from, like the Derby or something else that made money to cover those costs, so that we don't have to charge people for those.
And it gets people to the fair.
Correct.
And hopefully they're buying stuff.
Kids.
Kids.
The bounce houses.
Yeah, that's what that is. I can't think of anything else to call it.
Oh, I got you.
Inflatable entertainment is even worse, so inflatables.
It's great.
Okay.
Okay. So here is the 20%. that we're trying to cover. These are all the other line items in the fair budget that are not linked specifically to an event or an activity. So we're trying to make up that $20,000 in that plus 20. That's what that's for.
And how much did you make up? 12,000? Am I right about that?
Nope. I'll show you that in the next slide. Anybody have any questions
on
this one?
Sorry for jumping
ahead. You're good. So here's bottom line. So event specific, we're 21,000 to the plus. Non-event specific, we're 20,000 to the minus. So with just those, if you don't include personnel, overhead, or utilities, the fairgrounds pays for all those, we're $290 to the positive, actual money. If you add in personnel and overhead, we're at minus 143. With personnel, not overhead, we're at $78,000. So you can see, and overhead went up almost $23,000 from last year. I have no idea. I've got a question into accounting to see how that's calculated.
You're not the only one.
So I talked to the treasurer. Their overhead is $5,000. And this is just for the fair. This is not overhead for the fairgrounds.
Yeah. Now, the overhead includes not just like accounting's time.
It's IT and...
Yeah, but it's also, and one reason it went up so much is, and they just told me this morning because I knew this was going to come up as a question. It's amortization and depreciation too. So now that
all the buildings.
And now that you've got the RV park and the bathhouse and that kind of stuff,
yeah,
there's depreciation.
So
some of it's cash, it's not cash.
So at the bottom, I call it sponsorship subsidy. Basically, the county is putting out $143,000 if you do personnel, overhead, everything, or without overhead, actual cash out the door.
So that's an interesting question about the depreciation, especially when we got a grant for part of that too. And I've had asked accounting about that. We shouldn't be depreciating what we got granted.
True.
If we put our money in it, and I always have to, and the airport's the same way.
So at the end of this, we'll talk. I would like to come back to you guys for another discussion to talk about those items, overhead and all that stuff, accounting policies.
I think we also if I remember correctly, we had flagged calculation of overhead expenses as a broader topic that we wanted to discuss, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're not the only department that has questions that need to be addressed regarding that. Yeah.
Okay. So, does have any questions about that? I'll be presenting this to the fair board too, because we had a fairly heated discussion about the plus 20 and everything at our last meeting. So, okay.
So really, bottom line.
Send it off there. They don't need to come over and talk to me about it. So.
Well, I can't imagine if he hasn't.
Not yet.
So. I mean, but bottom line, the general fund is subsidizing the fair at that
for personnel basically.
78,
correct?
Pretty much. I mean, because the overhead is sort of a shell game. I mean, that's being moved around within the general fund. It is, right?
The allocation plan.
Yeah, but that money's not out the door from the general fund.
That's right.
It's being moved around within the general fund.
Correct.
Well, it is out of the door in the general fund. It's being allocated back into the people that are.
Just
generating the work.
Right, right.
I mean, Eric gets paid.
Right, right.
And, so, you know, so does...
Just who's paying it.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But the depreciation on the, like, all the buildings and everything, especially when none of those buildings are part of the capital replacement or infrastructure or everything,
you need to figure out what...
We're getting charged for that, but we don't see any benefit from that.
Yep, got it.
Okay.
So what... I mean, those buildings, the ones that are out there, have been depreciated out. They're not. There's no current depreciation. The only current depreciation is going to be on the bathhouse and
the
multi-purpose building.
The multi-purpose building. Yeah.
Yeah. Bathhouse, the RV park.
But even that, it's probably a 30-year life on it.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm not sure exactly how all of that works, so that's why I wanted to get
how that works.
So that I know what that money is going out the door for.
But again, if we got a grant for that, we shouldn't be depreciating the amount that we got a grant for.
Which is like the bathhouse. We got $350,000 for that also.
Yeah. And what did we put into it? 80 or 100?
No, that's not true. We got $250,000 because that was the max we could get at that time, and it was about $350,000. So
we put about $100,000 into it. And it's fair that we depreciate the
$100,000. Sure.
But not against the fair itself. Needs to go back.
No, and this is, and see, and the fairgrounds has its own depreciation. I don't know what that $65,000
yeah, so
is
you,
for the
you
fair.
Need to
yeah,
find
and
out.
I've asked that question. So,
yep.
Okay. So, on we go to the fairgrounds. This just a timeline of the fairgrounds when stuff was put in, taken out. If you guys have any questions,
thanks for that reference.
Mm-hmm. Here's the map. That we used at the fair last year. So you can see this is how we label everything so everybody knows what's going on. We don't have a new.
Do we need to put in the town's portion and we can put some label on it too?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that.
Turnaround's fair play.
Everything here, that's counted.
Yeah. So, okay. So, master plan update priorities. When we did the master plan update, we came up with these 12 priorities. So this is just a status.
When was that update?
2010.
Okay, thanks.
Is when we did the actual update. So I was just going to address a few of these. Like number one, the restroom shower facilities. That's the bathhouse. But we also have the grandstand restroom shower facilities, which the showers we closed for good in 2018, and this year one of our projects is to have somebody come in and look at those bathrooms, mold something, I don't know, they're not in great shape. So
which ones are those?
The old
restrooms right by the grandstands.
Oh,
we
yeah,
only open
yeah.
them during fair, and we yeah. only open them just the bathrooms, not the showers. We keep the showers closed, and there's only one shower in the men's and one in the women's. Let's see, so number two. Additional livestock
so,
housing.
Wait a second. What's wrong with it then? Them?
It's just in bad shape. They're old, and we don't know if it's mold or what is going on in the showers. We need to have somebody come in and evaluate exactly what's going on with those in the showers.
Well,
the bathrooms are
seems
just
like we
old.
Ought to take showers out anyhow.
The showers need to be gone from yeah, that restroom, and as we haven't been using them.
Remodel
anyway.
It into another bathroom stall.
Maybe. That's a good question, and that's what we
and
need
we
to look at.
And we don't want to keep it heated all. Do you keep it heated
no.
all winter?
We only open
drain
it during fair. It's all drained. It's
drained
all winterized. Mm-hmm.
Winterized? Yeah.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
Exactly.
That's why we built the new ones.
Exactly. We open it during fair. We close it during Adopt-A-Pig. So number two is one of those things where when we get funding for it, we are exceeding capacity with the 4-H and FFA animals, but this is a huge... probably another $500,000, million building. And is it worth spending that much money right now for 10 days? We're not going there. We did have a committee that was working on this project, but nobody could agree on anything. Then nobody would do their research and go back to the meetings with their stuff. So we're done with that until it comes up again. Then... going to number six, storage. We do have a lack of storage. It's starting to become an issue. We haven't really addressed it yet, but we will. Number seven. So livestock handling areas. We have done part of this. We do need to do some work in the holding pens behind the bucking chutes, just with the age of the chutes and the facilities and several rank Bronx and bulls, we've had to do a lot of repair, and so those need a lot of work to be able to really do anything fairly professional.
Safe.
And safe, yes.
So it kind of brings into question whether that can happen when you still ride rough stock, period.
Well,
I mean, the cost of it.
Right. I mean, we can at what level? We're not really sure, and we don't have right and a left-hand gates, which is big right now, especially for bull riding, so it just kind of depends, and that's one thing. When we get to the maintenance issues, we'll talk about how we're going to address all those. Number eight, landscaping. We started doing some landscaping last year, mainly in the RV park, and we'll continue that as funding is available. And our priority right now is landscaping in the RV park because that's where a lot
so
of our revenue is coming.
So where's GoGo funding come in?
for the RV park?
Well, no.
Landscaping?
As landscaping as the GoCo monies, when we've already pre-spent, what, 7 years into...
Oh, yeah. Well, landscaping, I'm talking like last year, we can just buy a few $100 worth of trees, bushes, little bits like that at a time. Jimmy, we use leftover horse track railing. He built us some flower boxes. FFA grew flowers for us at their greenhouse and donated those to us for cost. That's the kind of landscaping I'm talking about. And there's some people like Keith Spencer, when he passed, they used our chairs and tables. His son has a tree farm in Meeker. They're going to donate some trees, that kind of thing. So we're not talking... you know, tens of thousands of dollars in landscaping, just one of the 4-H clubs want to donate trees, benches, that kind of thing. So that's what that's about. And then number 9, the lift station. As you know, we've already talked about this, especially with the design of the multipurpose building restrooms. It was decided by the professionals that we don't want to put a lift station in. We'd want to tie directly into the town's water and sewer system. So when we get there, we have the design now, and once we get back up to funding levels, we'll move forward with that. But that's where
well, don't we need
right
to put
now.
In a lift station to activate? It was that sand.
Well, we probably will still maybe need a lift station, but we won't do the leach field.
The leach field.
Yes, correct. No leach field.
Yeah.
Number 10 through 12, we're really not working on right now. The classroom and training facility was supposed to be on the south side of the exhibit hall, but that is now a bridge and a path, so.
Say what?
On the south side of the exhibit hall,
yeah.
Where we put the new pedestrian bridge. It wasn't supposed to go directly behind the exhibit hall. It was supposed to go a little farther west, according to the master plan, which, if you get there, see right there, that's where that was supposed to go, and the bridge was supposed to be farther to the west. But now the bridge is right there to the east of the exhibit hall. So that's a path now. So that's no longer viable for a classroom or training.
So who decided to put the bridge there then?
It's part of that 100-year floodplain, all that stuff we dealt with the town.
Basically
all those
the town,
issues. Yeah, it was the town.
So Tim ended up agreeing to that? You guys did, or who?
Yes, Tim was here.
We had to
Tim
do that
here,
with the, for the
do.
Floodplain permit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We almost had a remap for FEMA. Remember that?
Yes.
Tom was involved in all that. So that's the master plan, the big red box. That's that huge extra livestock handling that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So we're actually...
$3 million building?
Yeah. I think... Mm-hmm. I'm pretty excited with how far we've come in the master plan update in the last 10 years. We've gotten a lot accomplished. Okay. Fairgrounds funding. Obviously, we charge for facility rentals, usage. We get grants, as you know, and then the Rock County General Fund. The budget, also, as you know, separated exhibit hall, bathhouse, so we can track what each one of those is bringing in and costing us. So now we get on to maintenance projects and priorities. And this stems from a list, basically, that Jimmy put together for us last fall. And I think you guys have it all in front of you. Our plan is we have this list, and we're going to continue to make this list. And what we're going to do, as soon as we have Jimmy down there full time, we're going to see if we need to expand this list. We're going to do a bigger, more comprehensive kind of look at what all we do need to do, and then we will sit down and prioritize that, and then we'll bring it to you guys with what we think we need to do. This year, however, we just, like we talked about, the general right here, the grandstand restrooms, we really need somebody to look at that and make sure it's safe for people to even use the restrooms during fair for that. And then also the Lockhart Barn, which is the Yellow Horse Barn. Right now, it's hard for Jimmy to get in and work the arena. As you know, you get calls because the tractor can't be anywhere that's heated. The drag master
freezes. We never
freezes.
Get any calls like that.
So we really need a place where we can store that, the tractor, the drag master, and where Jimmy can get in and work on equipment, projects, that kind of thing. Right now, we don't have anywhere for him to do that. The Lockhart Barn will need some help. So we would like to bring somebody in to see what it would take to make it a workable shop for the most part.
So that is,
I have a question. So mm-hmm. these red ones are priorities? Is that why
these
they're highlighted?
These are the ones that, yes, okay. that we are working on this year because we did get an okay. increase in that maintenance budget for the fairgrounds. So this right now are the ones that we want to work on for 2020. And then also the outdoor arena. We have a lot of... The outdoor arena was basically put together by the roping club in the 70s, Doug. Hayden Roping Club for the most part.
Yeah.
He wasn't here then.
All volunteers. So a lot of the pipe, we have been welding every year some issues where, you know, a horse is going to get cut or something really bad can happen. So we've been putting Band-Aids on a lot of places that we have to put Band-Aids. So this year...
Are these literal or figurative Band-Aids?
Like welding. Like you need to get in and replace the pipe or weld it because it's falling apart. We've got one side of the warm-up arena being held up by... Because it's starting to fall down. So we've got poles up there.
So marginally better than literal Band-Aids.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And that's a lot of the thing is with a lot of that, you know, it rusts out. So you replace the horizontal ones, but even the vertical ones are being rusted out. But you got to figure out how to replace that. And then you got to re-weld all eight of the poles back to it.
So that's something, the whole thing needs really evaluated. And is it worth spot welding, basically, or
just redo it?
Redo it, and basically, you know, once we get the GoCo funds prepaid to you guys, that is something we could go to GoCo for a grant to fund, basically, like a new Preferred arena, shoots, whatever. But you're looking at a lot of money.
7+ years out, right?
Aren't we only 3 years out?
Say what?
For the GoCo funding, I think we're only 3 years out. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That's what Dan said last time.
Okay.
Yeah. So the red ones, those are the ones that we really, for safety issues,
but that
means liability
that
issues.
No operating going in, it's paying
right.
off
right.
the 3 years
right.
that we have right. at about, what is it? I think it's about $90,000 a year.
We average anywhere from 18 to 24 a quarter,
yeah.
just depending. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Exactly. So that's all I have on that. I do want to point out...
So let's go back a
okay.
sheet on this one here. So,
right here?
And I'll pull it up on your... Since we just got this today, we didn't get to see it. So.
Sorry.
I guess a little bit... you know, and I know Donnie would shoot me, but... You know, the difference between the Rustock and... You know, there's a lot of cost here in relationship to the rough stock, too. So, that and the arena.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it isn't any different than the racetrack, too. I assume the racetrack's just about as bad, too.
It's wood. And, you know, we just replaced that in 2010, I think. We did a lot of that. But you are right. The rough stock, and that would be a lower-level priority. As opposed to the horse shows, because we are getting all of a sudden more horse events.
No, and it's easier.
So that's
it's easier
where,
to fence for a horse event
correct.
Than it is for Rustock.
And that's what we're going to focus on this year.
And I assume those events generate revenue as well.
They do.
Which is part of the reason to prioritize it.
Correct. And so this year, even, we have Cregan Ortner, I don't know if you guys know her from here in Steamboat. She... has, this will be her third year of putting on, she's finally got it locked in now, 2 shows a year, English horse shows. She said she was sick of going to Aspen, and there's a bunch of people that now she's got that established, and twice a year people know when they're coming for her horse show. There was a group in Hayden that just got a grant from the town of Hayden to start this Hayden Horsepower group. It's a company, Wendy Lind, but they just reserved every month from February till September to do one show in the outdoor arena or the multi-purpose building. She also wants to bring horse sales, and she's also going to make her LLC and insurance available for other people if they want to put on shows, that kind of thing. BLM just called. They want to do the wild horse adoption in May. So we're starting to get, now that more people are coming in the Buck Brannaman Clinic, and we got more people that are coming and seeing the facilities, and especially with the Dragmaster and sending Jimmy to that arena maintenance conference, all of a sudden it's kind of exploding, especially the indoor arena. with people using the facilities, which shows, like, our the open writing multi-purpose building, as of January 21st, we're at 38% of our revenue budget already. So we're already at almost $1,200 as of January 21st. And in 2017, we only took in $1,300 total.
How are we charging people for those kinds of events?
So events or open writing? So events, like private rentals, we just, like any other, the exhibit hall or anything else, we have a contract and
right.
we have a fee schedule, and it depends if they're youth nonprofit, nonprofit, or kind of resident, commercial, whatever they are. And it can be hourly, half a day, full day, depending on what it is. And if they need any, it includes one complete arena prep. If they want anything more than that, they have to pay for it. And then the open writing is so far still on the honor system. You have to sign in, pay $5 an hour. And since we put in the video camera.
Per person.
We've really cracked down on that, and I think that's helped. But there are people coming out of the woodwork from Craig and everywhere else to use the facilities.
So I think that's great. I mean, that
is
really good. And
yes.
I guess my question would be about cost recovery and whether we think, I have no idea what the fees are, so I guess
right.
I would be curious whether we think they're adequate for
maintaining the facility. Adequate, and that's part of what I'd like to meet with you guys again next time, as I've been working on a new fee schedule, and I will bring that to you guys also, because there's also questions about who pays, who doesn't pay, why I work for the county, or I do this, or I do that, I shouldn't have to pay, and
so
I try to make those decisions, and when people are, you know, much higher pay grade than me, I'm not going to argue with them about
if they work for the county, they need to pay less like everybody else.
Well,
that was my thought.
Like the amount of patrol.
That's what we're talking about.
Well, if they're on county business, you know, that's.
But not just like, I want to come hang out with my horse. So it sounds like maybe you need some support from us from a policy standpoint on putting some of that into policy.
Yes. And, you know, the question always comes up, does 4-H pay? Do they not pay? We put out a lot of money that supports, you know, the 4-H kids and what they do and the use of the facilities over there. And during fair, you know, they charge money for everything that goes on that they do. Yet we pay for all of their facilities. So
4-H built that building, remember?
Yeah, we've had that discussion.
How many of them work for the county, those 4-H kids?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the multi-purpose building?
Yeah.
So that, I would like to be a part of that discussion where we can have some comparable data
us. I appreciate having the Fair Board having this conversation, too, because...
They will have a different opinion, guarantee you.
They will?
Than me.
Oh.
I think we all need to look at it, and mm-hmm. I think there needs to be a conversation about cost recovery and about...
We're concerned about cost recovery and fairness and the rest.
And we know that we're subsidizing it at a certain level, and so I think we should evaluate what that level is. And and this deferred maintenance is all part of that, right? I mean, just...
I think so, too.
Because we, at some point, the fairgrounds is not going to be viable if we don't address the maintenance.
Exactly.
And so we need to make sure we're able to do it.
Follow Jefferson County.
Oh, gosh. And, you know...
Better than following who are our commissioners that got voted out because they spent so much money on the fairgrounds?
Montrose County.
Boy, that's...
So there's all kinds
so
of...
nice. That's but I can't imagine...
$1 million a year, their debt payment on that.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't want to do that. And that's where...
good, because it's not happening.
Those guys got voted out.
So, and just as a general kind of how we're moving forward, we've been doing so many big projects for so many of the past years, you know, the bathhouse, the RV park, and all that stuff. We're ready to just like step back and start, you know, breathe from big construction projects and start working on this kind of stuff and recoup some of our GoCo funds, obviously, and just
so you
do
haven't
some of the work
told
we've
us
been
how your trailer park is work your RV park is.
It is craziness.
I've heard that it's.
We, in 2019, I believe, we brought in $40,000 in revenue. And it just, I get more calls every day.
So how many got rented out now?
There are five.
Five in
all
there?
Winter, huh. Which is insane. Except, Abraham just left, so now we're four. Yeah, we just had one last weekend, a couple weekends.
Who are they? that are staying there?
So most of them, which I knew part of it would be temporary workers.
Like working on the school or, yeah.
Yes, and we're full-time RVers who they live in their RVs full-time. One of them works for United Companies. That's the basis. That's where our money's coming from. It's not nightly rentals. It is from people. It is from our monthly rentals. And it, we've already got it booked out. Half of it's booked out for next summer already, and I've already got two spots booked for next winter.
Wow.
And I've got a couple weddings coming up this fall where they're booking all the RV sites that are available, plus some of the primitive electric sites. The camping is huge.
Let's put it on our list of contributions to affordable housing. How's that?
Yeah. It is, no kidding. I mean, it
yes.
is.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And if Tim was here, he could attest to the small house that we had there.
But the whole reason why we put this in was it was going to be backfeeding some of the needs of the rest of the fair. I mean, so is that plan still feasible? Are we still going
to be able... For that to help cover those costs?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, we're already... I mean, that thing's making money. That thing is making... And I didn't bring those numbers with me. I thought Randall was going to be here, but... Yes, that, well, just like when I cashed out a bunch of comp time, that's what paid for my comp time. We went over on our, fixing our water, the RV park paid for that.
So that was going to be one of my questions too. If we got all those deferred thing, maintenance things in the, we had underground water things that we were fixing.
That's
and
in
then
the budget
we had
for
the
this
multi-purpose
year.
Building, the fire system as well. So we got, that's, we did get it fixed.
That's done. Yeah. That got done in 19. Yes, so that's done. So we do have it in the budget to fix the rest of the hydrants that are leaking on all the water lines, and then also to work on some of these other items. That's our plan for 2020 for maintenance. And then really, it'll be so nice to have Jimmy down there. We'll evaluate everything again, and then we'll also work on the cost recovery and the fee schedule. And we'll bring that to you guys and have those conversations about what it is you think we should or shouldn't do.
So Lockhart Barn, to even do that, have you guys done a preliminary guesstimate on what that's going to cost? Because it probably doesn't have, it, I don't believe it has any insulation on it either.
No.
Doesn't have,
it's going to be a work in progress. You know, because it was originally for horse, we had a bunch of horses in there, so there's those outside, you know, doors so they could go to the outside stalls.
Yeah.
The horses have kicked those down, we've put plywood back up and painted it. I mean, it's just... it's kind of crazy. We did a little bit of, Jimmy put in some new lighting last year. It needs to be electrical looked at, but we need to make a plan for that building and what can we do this year and what do we need to budget for next year. But maintenance really needs a place for the tractor and to be able to work on stuff when it's 10 below so that we can keep things moving forward.
So I am totally supportive of the concept of us putting this all out on paper, looking what our cost recovery is, and sure. understanding how much it costs us to operate the fairgrounds. Because, you know, you were there at the meeting in Hayden. We have people, I know there were only a couple, but there are more, right. for sure, who say we want you to support the fairgrounds. And I think we owe people the transparency of saying, if that's what you want, this is what it's going to cost, and this is how much we're subsidizing it from taxes, right, from
exactly.
the general fund.
Yep.
And so... we can really, and I understand the pushback from the fair board, but at the same time, I think we have to have a little bit of backbone to say, this is how much it costs, and this is where the money comes from, and this is how much we can provide, and this is what's not going to be covered unless we increase
right.
the cost.
And the fair board, I think, will probably be divided. It'll be the people who have been on the fair board forever, and then some of the new people who really, you know, understand that it's not a business per se, but you need to treat it as such.
Well, we need to understand where the money's coming from, exactly. right? It's not just falling out of the sky.
Exactly. And what it costs. And that's people don't understand. It's like, oh, well, look at the rifle fairgrounds. Well, they're in the red. I mean, they're busy all the time, but they're in the red.
Wait and see until this coming year and the next few years, revenues are down like 40% off.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the oil and gas business.
Well, and that's even just talking to those guys at the CAFS convention about their fair. I mean, they spent $20,000 on a monster truck thing. I'm like, how do you guys pay for that? You know, that's just, that's not where we're willing to go. Not only can we not sell
tickets. So the Lockhart Barn thing, as you're going through that and mm-hmm. analyzing that, you know, I guess my question would be, is that still the best option? I realize what Jimmy needs to have. I mean, I was a little concerned when we didn't do anything when the Quonset hut
fell in. And
well, so that's another question that, I mean, because all the insurance proceeds from the Convent Hut went to build a weed garage at the Steamboat Shop. So the fairgrounds didn't see any of those insurance proceeds. So, and that is a good question. You know, is it going to be too much to fix the Lockhart barn up, or do we put something, a different building on the concrete pad?
12 by 24 building up.
Where the Quonset Hut was.
On the pad.
And that's exactly the conversations that we've had. Whatever would be the best use of our funds that we could make it work for everything. Agreed. And that's what we're just, we want to evaluate and move forward with the best option.
So a couple of years ago, I got a call from one of my good Fair Board members again, too, about the sponsorship things. Did you get that all straightened out?
We did.
Tickets and fair tickets? And
yep.
You guys have that all?
We
and again,
did.
I appreciate the Fair Board. I don't think I, you know, but we need to create accountability through you down to the Fair Board. So, you know, however that happens. But, you know,
that's each
again,
Fair Board
there is
member
just
gets 10 tickets to pass out as they want.
Okay, good.
Instead of coming and finding me in the middle of the event where they're like, I need 5 tickets for so-and-so. And then the auditors are like, well, how do you account for these tickets? Well, you know, so-and-so came, took some. I have no idea, but this year, and now that we went with the new website, Sapphire Company, and online ticketing, the auditors, when they come see me next week, they're going to be so excited because it is they generate the reports of everything. And if it wasn't purchased online, they bought it in my office, we still had to go into the system and account for what we did. And if they were ones that we gave away, we still had to account for those in the system. So we can tell you where every ticket went.
That sounds way better.
It is so nice,
and
there's no
better,
issues. And so each Fair Board member, they get 10 wristbands, and then they can give them to whoever they want. They can use them for their family. So.
Yeah, I appreciate what you guys are doing down there, sort of winning the lottery. I mean, again, you know, again, it's been my objective not to increase the subsidy that we've been putting into the fair. You know, and yeah, we need to maintain what we've been doing and the rest.
Well, and if you look even at that $143,000 back, was it 08? Nancy and you, and I can't remember who else was here.
Dan.
I think it was 100 and Stan. 160,000 was the max, and then anything after that would come out of GoCo funds. So I think we've only exceeded that one time. So that's pretty good. But that would be, you know, the next discussion. Let's look at everything. Where do we want to be?
Well, and again, I guess we need to figure out what that overhead is, and we'll have our conversation about overhead, too.
Yeah.
I mean, fair is fair. We do need to make it fair.
And I don't have a problem with that. I am just trying to figure out where it comes from.
Right.
Well, and part of that conversation, too, is, you know, I get invoices from Road and Bridge for their time and equipment. And, this is part of that.
We're a charity.
Well, I know, but I'm paying retail prices. I'm not getting retail service. And I don't know who else gets those invoices. Is it just Fair and Fairgrounds?
Anybody we do work for.
Anybody in the county?
Yep.
Really? Everybody pays for plowing? Really?
It's a great question.
Well, that was one of my things I talked to Ray about, and I'm like, can I bid it out? Because we're paying the same price. I can hire so-and-so for down the road, and he'll have me plowed out when I show up for work. But that's the next conversation. So,
I guess I would also just make the comment that I think it's when I look at this list of deferred maintenance, my concern, and without having to increase the subsidy, but my concern is we reach a point where it's so bad that we just are like, we got to shut it down. And I don't think we want to get to that point. That would be way bigger of a PR emergency than trying to figure out how to recover costs. We're not, but we want to deal with it before we're there,
exactly.
Right?
Which is why, yes, we want to work on that instead of any new big projects or any new RV
take care of it,
whatever. But and really get a handle on what we need to
well,
do.
Well, even
what it's
even if
cost.
You go back to your list. If you go back to your list, you know, have you guys prioritized those things? I mean, because
which ones?
Right.
The
master plan?
No, the deferred maintenance list.
No, the
is that the list you were talking about, or the other one?
Well, you guys had another list of the things.
Oh, that was the master plan priorities.
Yeah, that one, that list. There.
Yeah, that's those are the priorities. It was listed 1 through 12 when we did
in that order.
When we first did the master plan update, we listed it in that order, but then we also said. But we can do it out of that order as funding becomes available.
Okay.
And that's what we've done.
So on the deferred maintenance, I mean, does it make sense to go back and kind of identify costs for each of those and then prioritize it in order. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Between cost and safety and everything else.
Because something that's low cost may become a higher priority just because you can get it done easily, right?
Exactly.
And if it's a safety issue, then it becomes a higher priority. Yeah.
Around there is just safety-wise. Just because, I mean, we got people, you know, that don't know the facilities that are messing around, running around. Mm-hmm. You know, things can come up out of nowhere.
Right.
You know, we got panels, we got, you know, if we got electrical wires or anything else that they're screwing around with, you know, we got to make sure that there's no ability for any of that, even for the animals to get to.
So what happened on our marquee sign?
We haven't done anything with that yet. Although I can say back in 2010 when we did this, those signs were like super expensive and they're nowhere near that now. So we just haven't.
So, but at the same point in time, we our UGOCO, our AGNC grant we used for the entryway and then we couldn't find anybody to do it.
Right. So we have the design. We just couldn't find anybody to construct it. Correct. Yeah, so do we put a digital marquee on the entrance? We could do that. I mean, that's they've become pretty affordable these days. And originally, as far as like solar or alternative energy, Tim's deal was to do some solar maybe on the exhibit hall and get some of those costs. And I know, I'm sure that's changed in 10 years, that kind of stuff. But.
I appreciate the work on this. I mean, this is helpful information to understand what's going on and I look forward to the next conversations.
Yeah, we'll look at the fee schedules. And
as long as they call Doug, not me.
I think Doug gets caught in the co-op and everywhere else. I'm surprised you haven't been called since the last meeting.
Last fair board meeting?
Yeah.
No, I haven't, actually, no.
There was a bit of a tantrum. Of, not by me, but.
Of by what?
But I was clear in what I had to say about the tantrum.
Even if we weren't going to bring it up, you may as well tell me.
Sounds like it's been brought up.
It's a tantrum by you, or is it a tantrum by one of the board members?
No, it wasn't a tantrum by me. So, Donnie wants to do a CPRA rodeo, two of them.
Yeah.
Last weekend affair. And we had a contractor come, and that was in November. And then in December, David and Donnie weren't there, and the fair board said, you know, that's too expensive. It's like 10 grand just for the contractor. Can we sell that many tickets to a rodeo? After the
so 2 days is 20 grand.
No, that's for the 2 days.
Okay.
But that's just for the stock contractor. Oh. That's not anything else.
Or so organization taking tickets and anything.
Anything. Insurance, because we have to provide the insurance, all that kind of stuff. So the fair board at the December meeting said, no, it's too much money. Let's do something else on that Sunday. So at the last fair board meeting, it came up again. I can't believe you guys did this when we weren't here, blah, blah, blah. We need to revisit it. Well, we might have the $6,000 in sponsorship, blah, blah. And I said, that's still, I don't think we can sell tickets 2 days in a row to a rodeo at the fair because people can go to a rodeo anytime all summer in Steamboat. That was my take on it. They thought I just didn't want to do it. I said, okay, I'll put together a budget of all the costs and I'll bring it to the next meeting. So that's what I have. And I've got actually a copy of it here. Even with our typical in-kind stuff, we need to come up, and I did $6,000 in ticket sales, which I think is more than generous, more than I think we could actually sell. We still need to come up with almost $16,000.
In sponsorship.
If they can do that, great. And they said, well, sometimes you got to take a risk. And what I said was, I'm not.
Well, they're not the ones taking the risk.
Well, and that's what I said. I said, I am not willing to take that big of a risk. And they said, well, you make the final decision anyway. And I said, no, I don't. You decide what you guys want to do, and I support you. But when it comes to this kind of a risk, you need to go to the commissioners because I don't back that kind of a risk. So
what ended up happening on the indoor use of the multipurpose building?
What do you mean?
With the buck and shoots and the rest.
We have those.
I understand. Well, I haven't heard any.
Yes, how many rodeos did Donnie have last year?
Two.
And he was going to have.
No, he only had one, actually. Yeah. He's going to have two. Had one. And that's all we've seen. So we got him for $600.
Which is fine, whatever. But he hasn't.
They're useful, so.
No. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
So, but he hasn't
brought forth anything else. He's the one that I'm assuming they were the ones assuming that we confront that $16,000?
Yeah. I think they just thought it would be the $10,000 for the subcontractor. And when I put all the numbers together, it's like I told them it would be at least $15,000. So at our meeting next week, we'll go over all of that.
Okay. Well, I would venture to guess that you have our support in telling them that we are not willing to take that big of a risk.
Yeah. I told them I'm not going to support that. And so if they felt that strongly that they could bring themselves
No, tell them not to. I mean, they think you make the final call, so make the final call, right? I mean, they can do whatever they want with that.
I was just kind of like made my ears tingle when they were talking about that. But anyway.
Okay, very good.
So was there anything else that you were hoping to hear today or you expected to hear?
No, I think that's all great.
Ball field stuff?
No, we do need to
5 minutes.
I think that's a difference.
Work with Mr. Mendisco to figure out what the hell. Okay.
He's supposed to come to my office tomorrow to talk about the IGA stuff. I sent him everything that I came up with years ago about the changes. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Take care of it
then.
I
do know.
Tell him to quit planning to use our land to do his projects.
Well, or to give us more than 2 weeks to make a decision on it.
Or a night to write a letter.
Submit the grant and then come tell
us. Well, and that's one thing. GoCo requires that you have either own the land or have permission to use the land when you submit a grant.
Makes sense.
They have not received a letter from the county. I thought when they turned it in, maybe they had talked to you guys and gotten one, but...
Well, they asked us for one, and we told them they needed to
And
update
so that's,
the IGA first, right?
A month after the grant was supposed to be submitted, I thought maybe they didn't do it, but they did. So what that means,
that's
I don't
their
know.
Problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Lockhart a little bit leery on that, putting more good money after bad money. Yeah.
Well, and it might end up, I was going to bring just a construction guy down and see what it would take, and then it might be easier just to get a prefab something.
Absolutely.
Concrete.
Yeah.
Yes.
Barry just has one stop with the commissioners here. So
I just sent you an email. I've got a land management software. Just give you a quick update. I'd step out of one of the work sessions to come here, so we're busy right now. So I gave you a breakdown of invoice and payments so far that have been made, both Route County solution and, of course, the city solution. We paid half of the total contract amount with the city, but a big reason for that is that they had to physically install the hardware on site. So that's why you see a larger amount being paid as far as the 50% of what the building department owes the city.
Because they decided not to do cloud.
Cloud, so they own they're the owner. It's an asset already, right? Sitting there, it's installed.
Okay.
So that's why.
Thank you.
Whereas us, we're not. So property data information was provided to them back in December. That's Emmy.
So when did you kick the on switch?
Well, we signed the contract back in July.
Right.
They came here for their on-site visit in November.
Okay.
And the on switch went like that right afterwards.
Okay.
So it is live now?
Don't use the term live and software means that we're physically using it, which is not, and so is the public, which is not the case.
Okay.
So when they were here in November.
That's kind of what I'm asking.
They had a projected calendar they gave us at that time. And honestly, it scared me because, I mean, my goal for having this complete would be this year. They weren't even going to actually start us until February, March? Into what we're already doing now. So we complained, voiced our concern about that, and said that did not match up well with what your salesman presented to us for a start date, and we got them to kick this in gear. So we have made up some lost ground, and they've been working with us and put us at a priority level. So they have a big project in Oregon.
So it does help to whine a little bit then, huh?
Yeah, it does.
So it is not live.
No.
And it will be live when, is it according to your timeline?
So we can get to that, I guess, farther down.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry to jump back.
But just to jump you back to what took place in November. So that was their first on-site visit, and that's where you start to meet some of your project team members. You definitely meet your project leader, which is Terry Wright with City View. And then we met Debs at that time as well. She's kind of a IT specialist behind the scenes. But now we have our full team set up, and she was able to obtain the primary staff members that she wanted to be working on this project. So we got the best, which is good, the City View side.
From City View, huh?
Yeah. So, and we've been extraordinarily happy with the staff that we've been working with in these work sessions so far. So City, as I said, installed their hardware. So January 22nd through the 7th. So right now, we're in the middle of 3 weeks of very intense remote data collection sessions. They're 3 hours apiece. I was double booked today, so I got one from 9 to 12. I had one from 1:30 to 4:30. Does that make sense? And we're all participating in these per module. So you have a code enforcement module, a planning module, permitting module, mobile inspection app module, cashiering module, and portal. So for like, Alan is participating in the planning standalone. That's just planning department so far that's been in most remote sessions. We're participating in the permitting. So is Gio, and so is Scott or Gina with health, because we all offer permits. Code enforcement, it's primarily been Alan, myself, Malia, and Jesse, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Scott and Gio, they just historically haven't really done code enforcement work. They're relying on us, which is perfectly fine because we perform it on a daily basis. So what works for us will work for them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we're just taking the lead on that module. So you have to have 3 work sessions per module. So 9 hours of work to complete before they actually physically come here between the week of February 10th and the 14th. And then that week when they're here, we'll finish up all these last customizations, remote data collection questions that are still left hanging, oddball stuff that we couldn't figure out together remotely over the screen. So that's going to be another busy week, although not quite as busy because they didn't double book us. So there isn't more than one module going on at one time with CityView, so it's not quite as intense.
But when you say they're doing it remotely, are they doing like a webinar, or they do?
Yeah, you're looking at their screen on your computer screen. So you're following along, seeing the software, seeing the front end, seeing the back end, and you're configuring it. You're setting up rules. Like, give you an example, if you're going to come in and get a new single family home building permit from me, who do I need to get that review notice? Who's going to review your plans besides the building department? What other permits do you need to have automatically? Well, you're going to need electrical, plumbing, and mechanical for sure. So you're programming the software to automatically create these rules and send people in the right direction. First off, like, who's going to review
it? Customer.
The customer.
People, customer.
Yep. So it's automated. You're trying to take that human error factor away, right? Or what are the unknowns? There shouldn't be any unknowns. This is a really like intense database where you can control a lot of things and set rules and workflows right out of the gates. But you got to think through that process. And you got to think that, is it 100% of the time? If it's only 99% of the time, then I don't want that rule on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's got to be a 100% for sure, given that you need an electrical, plumbing, mechanical permit for your house, which is true.
That's the data collection that's happening.
Yes.
They're collecting data from you about how it needs to be configured.
Yep. Per permit type.
Yeah.
You know, and per application type. So you're creating workflows and rules and processes in the software. It gets in really, really deep in the weeds. You can ask Alan. But
it's better that that's in the weeds, and then we can stay out of the weeds once it's implemented.
Yeah,
right?
No,
which is the point.
This is a good, good software. You want it to be like that. And then that same is true. If you BCC asks us for a certain report, we're going to be able to produce it, right? Because we've collected the right data. We have these text box and scripts fields to extract that data from. So it'll be a huge benefit. But it's really a lot of work. Plus, we're walking away with homework right now. Besides spending 9 hours per module, things that we need to produce and get done for them. But we're staying on top of it. Fortunately for all of us, it's definitely our off season, right, for permits and applications.
So, what was their original plan if they weren't going to plan on? I mean,
they wouldn't have started these remote sessions till late February. That's what they told us when they came here in November. And I mean, I just right away was like, are you kidding me? No way. We're not waiting that long.
No,
That
wasn't our interpretation when we signed the contract either.
Not mine, right?
Well, yeah. It wasn't ours either.
Yeah.
I think we were assuming, well, we're ready to go.
So
any day yesterday would be fine.
It was really a breakdown in communication between who was our salesperson and getting handed off to our implementation team, right?
Yeah.
That's where there was just poor communication.
Trust me, the car runs, huh?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So
it's never been in an accident.
But these remote sessions are extremely productive. They're intense, but productive. It's given us a bird's eye view of what the software really has to offer, both specifically in the back end. And so far, I've been thoroughly impressed, even more impressed than what I thought of the software before we made the decision. And I would let Alan vouch for that as well. But it's looking really good. And so out of the box, what's really great is the out of the box features. In some cases, we're turning things off that we won't even ever use here in the county side, right? So it's coming built to accommodate just about anything you could throw at this software. And we're being careful, though, because we've grown in our own processes, and I think we've created workarounds in lack of having a good software that you get trained to want to answer no to something he might be explaining the software can offer you. But we take a step back and we say, wait a minute, just because we have a workaround that does this for us, let's not utilize that. Let's utilize this software to the fullest capability. We're paying a lot of money for it, right? So we're taking a lot of new things in, accepting them, and we'll change our processes internally. Does that make sense? To adapt to that, but so that we fully utilize the software. So that's kind of the remote sessions change order potentially. So for sure, we have staff within two departments, Environmental Health and Public Works, that decided, yes, having one user license was not a good idea. So, like, both departments, if Geo's out and customer walks in the office and wants to hand Kathy a check to process a permit, Kathy needs to be able to take the check and process the permit. So they've decided to get her a user license. Originally, they thought they'd just be able to skate through with one, which is untypical and impossible, right, to maintain service. We're all sick. We take vacation. We're out of the office, so you need more than
so one. In that example you're giving, I guess I don't understand why the license can't be general for the department. Like, why does each person, if one person is rarely going to use it and they're only an emergency backup, why do they actually need their license?
They don't offer floating licenses. Acela didn't offer.
Tell them that's BS. They should offer.
I think any true database.
That's my question. Yeah.
Any true database that's really going to be a strong software isn't going to offer that. Now, view permit could care less. I could add all of you today, and I wouldn't pay any more.
Right.
But it's not a true software.
Right.
So
what are we talking about change order then? Are we talking 1,000? Are we talking 10,000?
So per year, per year, a user license is right around $2,260 a year per person.
$2,260.
Yeah. To carry that license and access the software. So, I mean, I'm just giving you a heads up. That's probably been, you know, of course, all the departments ask that, too.
Right.
At the beginning, I was very upfront, told them there's no such thing as floating. You can't sign in as Geo. That's technically breaking the law. Mm-hmm. Second of all, whatever you enter is going to show up that Geo made that inspection or took that payment, right?
Right.
We don't want that. So they made some changes and added some licenses. And same with Environmental Health. So Scott and Gina will carry the license. Everybody else in their department would be external reviewers, so they'll have access read-only.
Yeah.
They won't be able to make input. They can add a comment, but they won't be able to alter the system, so to speak. So, like, Mike Marty came up with Alan's planning module because Mike reviews all their planning applications. So he's going to need a license at some point as well. So Ray's going to hold off on that because the more users he adds during implementation, then I have to go back and redo that entire spreadsheet. Remember how I broke down the cost per department?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then that's going to create supplemental budget nightmares. It's going to redirect costs to all four departments again. So he's going to hold off and wait and buy Mike's license after we go live. So then at that point, he can project that cost in the 2021 budget this year and forego the training that Mike would receive, which is fine. So train the trainer can take place. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So that won't be a big one, and that change order won't come for a while. We actually, because, how did that work? Because Chad is gone, so we haven't changed our total number. That's why. So we don't have any change orders coming with user licenses. The other one is probably let Alan wrote a memo that we're going to give to City View, but I'll probably let you kind of explain the potential change order to come with the P drive, right?
Yeah. So prior, when we were still using Permits Plus prior to View Permit, all of our digital documentation was stored on the P drive. And that, I guess that wasn't taken into consideration during the RFP, transferring that information from our server on the P drive into City View. So they're not aware that we have all of this extra data that also needs to come into City View. So we need to talk to them about that. And
what kind of data is that?
Just all historical.
Yeah,
data?
Just the old staff reports, the application materials, any letters, any digital documentation.
Plus. So all that documentation through Permits Plus that got converted over to View Permit.
It didn't get converted to View Permit.
Well, it did.
That's why
it's in. But it came across, it's completely shattered, unusable data. So when it came from Permits Plus into View Permit, it came across as some as building permits, multiple numbers, same application. And then their tiering system, which is extremely important to what they do, how they have master projects and sub, parent-child relationship is a mess. And View Permit, it's unusable. It's such a mess that I guarantee you it costs 6 to 10 times more than if we could just convert it cleanly from what Jim Payne has is some Excel files, basically. Mm-hmm.
In the P drive,
yeah. And also we'd be dating back and taking data pre-Permits Plus out of View Permit. So somehow, also, that got imported into View Permit was records from 1971 forward, right?
For planning applications.
For planning. So they went through, like, 5 years of data entry during Permits Plus.
First got Permits Plus.
And they had a staff member working on basically, you know, historical document management, but inputting that into Permits Plus. But that, again, came over really ugly into View Permit. So we, you know, it really was at that time when we were doing the data conversion from Permits Plus to View Permit where we would have to put the brakes on and been like, time out, we need to clean all this up, right? And View Permit didn't either offer that service. I have no idea. It wasn't here, but. So that's kind of where we live with that. And this is important. They really, you guys need this. I don't think you could function without it. So everything in their department is filed in accordance to the way this is tiered on the P drive, correct?
Well, we're kind of confusing things because the tiering is what was within the Permits Plus software. The P drive is just all of the documentation that's associated with each individual application. So that's one side of it, the P drive, the actual letters from the community, the staff reports, the minutes, the applications, any other documentation that was created during the review of that application. And the filing system is something that lived in the Permits Plus software that tried to get transferred over to View Permit. They didn't have the ability to replicate that, so they created a workaround, which kind of worked, but not really. And so now provides absolutely no ability to convert it from Viewpoint to City View. And that
well,
was
sounds all, like that would be a bad idea anyhow.
Yeah. But Jim created a spreadsheet that makes all of those parent-child relationships. So we do have clean data that shows the relationship across the three different tiers. And so hopefully we can present that to them and they can use that to be able to, because they have the ability to do that three tiers. We just need to figure out how to fit our existing data into their data format.
Didn't we talk about potentially doing that manually?
We did, but we still want to have a conversation with CityView to see if they can do it.
It's the backup, right? So, like, let's say they come back and they say, no, this data from the P drive doesn't match up or it's unfortunately we can't convert it, right? Or they come back and say, yeah, we can do it, but it's going to cost $150,000, right? So we need to, I think what we decided to do was approach them with this potential for a change order, get their professional advice, let them discuss it with Jim Payne and see, is it possible? What's the cost? What's the time frame to do something like that? Is it going to slow the project down, right? Because we are in collaboration with the city. We need to keep moving at the same pace. You like get these unanswered questions from them, and then if it comes back where it's not an option or it's too costly or it's going to slow the project down right now, then we'll make that decision, right? Then maybe we have to do it manually once we go live, or we could do it manually during testing once we actually have physical access. Or plan C, right, like what you and I talked about, historical document management software. That's a whole other discussion. That's a different type of system. And that's kind of what the city has with OnBase, right? You've heard of that. It's a document storage, document management system for historical files so and scans.
You can link your document management system to your permitting software so that you'd be able to pull from that when you opened the file, essentially, for a parcel. You know, the system is GIS-based, and so you'd click on the parcel, and it would probably move over to OnBase or whatever that is.
And this is 100% separate from the things that are recorded in the clerk's office, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
80% separate?
Yeah, I think I mean, the only things that we record in the clerk's office, plats, resolutions,
so
agreements.
Some things, yeah.
So some things, but 80%.
Very little.
But very little.
We're talking about, like, we wouldn't obviously put in, like, notes and things like that. You know, it wouldn't be the working file. It would be the final approval of everything. And that way, you know, if you're doing research on at home, you know, you don't have to come into the office, and you can actually pull up the documentation to do that research, and it's all you would need and no more. You know, we don't need notes and things like that.
Plus the approved drawings, like for all the special use permit, everything lives here, not in B permit.
Yep.
In the P drive right now.
Yes.
Or in paper files.
But the goal is that this is going to be in City View. And it's just the process of how we get it.
So
there.
We're hopefully not holding up the implementation of City View.
That's
take care
the goal.
Of the P drive.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
To not hold
yeah.
up.
Not
yeah.
hold up.
Yeah.
But reach out to them. Provide them like a memo, a description. We're going to do this when they're on site. Provide them with this information, and then that way we can discuss it. Give them good information. Show them the files a little bit, right? And see, then get a proposal back from them. Mm-hmm. So the city essentially is using like Excel files to get uploaded as their data conversion because they've never had a software. So it's not that it can't be done, but mm-hmm. we need to know the cost, right?
And what format it
and
needs to be
formatting.
In.
And what formatting. Yeah.
Yep.
So what's plan B?
If that fails?
Or that there are nowhere that's $150,000 or what? We keep the P drive?
Manually is what we just
yeah,
said.
We would manually do it.
We won't be keeping the P drive. We will not be keeping them on the P drive. I mean, we'll need to put them in the system. It's just a question of how.
How?
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be.
You need a summer job, Doug?
No, not at all.
So our IT department wants to get rid of Permits Plus. Break the kit, you know, like.
Well,
put
no,
it away.
I understand
yeah.
that, but
yeah.
but even this is non-Permits Plus.
No, but some of the tiering is that what I'm hearing?
Some of the tiering is yes.
And the tiering does you would need that tiering to come off Permits Plus and go into the P drive to save.
No, the P drive is just documents. It has nothing to do with the tiering.
Okay, but. But you can't re-tier
child.
Yeah, you can't. The only source that is accurate right now for tiering lives in
Permits Plus.
So they need to solve that as well before they discontinue service on Permits Plus. If they want to maintain that tiering, right?
Yep.
So there is some
moving parts.
Yeah.
So Plan B is manual.
Yeah.
Yes.
Plan C, it sounded like, is a totally separate system for maintaining these documents that could be linked to.
Right. Like a true document management system completely separate from, you know, a land management system. That document management arguably could be used across the county. You know, wouldn't necessarily have to be just one department.
So Grand Junction was a community that showed us what they did for that.
Did they use OnBase?
They use LaserFish. So there's at least two vendors out there.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with OnBase.
Yeah. Well, hopefully option A is viable. It sounds like the easiest.
Yes, for sure. From our view, who knows what they're going to say.
I mean, I think the bottom line is trying to, you know, have an efficiency for staff and an efficiency for any resident or other user who's going to be able to interface with the system, make sure they have the information both to do the research on the staff side and to, you know, do research on the public side.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, if it gets accessed once in 20 years...
I mean, how are we going to know which one's to pick?
No, I understand.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll come back to you. We'll get the information from CityView and see what's possible, and then we can answer most of these questions, I think.
I know I've kind of been told that we're not exploring this, but wouldn't this type of project be appropriate for one of those CIPRA grants? I don't know how much money they give out, but...
It's pretty small amounts.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, it would be, I think it would be a good project. It's especially if we end up with, like, B or C options.
Right, exactly.
You know, I think CIPRA is like this, what is it, Colorado, essentially the IT director.
Internet portal or something, is that?
I don't know what it even stands for.
But anyway, I think they're under $10,000 grants.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not a lot of money, but it could help with, like, research or something like that. You know, small options.
Yeah, because their stated goal is about transparency to the public and software program, you know, technology programs or initiatives that accomplish that. So it seems if there were
something we could at least look at, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So then on to project calendar. So I attached this here and I highlighted it in colors, but it didn't show up in mine, just to give you guys an idea of where we're at. So by February 14th, we will have completed the areas that I highlighted that you would have seen in your work agenda in green. And we'll begin with item number 26 down here, so which is process mapping, customization, and workflows. One of the big things they do also when they leave here after that week of February is they go and define the scope, right? And they want to make sure that the salesperson and that sales team that put our quote together hit everything and are identifying and matching up with what we've done so far through these remote data collections. So they're going to define the scope and then let us know if there's any changes or alterations to cost at that point too, which is important for all of us. But we would have approximately, 260 days of work to complete after February 14th when they leave here. So as you can see, that's pretty tight. To get that done by January 1st would be ideal, I think, for all of us to flick a new software on at the beginning of the year and start new applications, new permits. So that's what we're shooting for. They know that. CityView's aware of that. And they got some areas where they're going to try to make up time, and we're going to do the same and keep plugging away. So I would say by the time we get into testing, I'll have be able to paint you a better picture of how things are going and whether we'll meet that goal or not, which will be sometime in May, realistically. But that's kind of a overall update on the software. And I did throw in there, if anyone's interested in seeing the software that week that they're here, please feel free to stop in. All those meetings will be held in the building department conference room, so you can stop by any day of the week you wanted to get a taste or a view of the software, what it looks like.
So run by the 265 days. What is that again?
So that's how many days of work we have left on this per this calendar that I gave you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Once they leave February 14th, so we'd be down to number 26 right here.
Yeah. Okay. You had it highlighted. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have all that left, and there's a lot of some big days specifically. Interface and customization, that's big hours on their end. And then so, testing for us.
So back for us dummies here, IT for dummies here. So when is the go-live date then? And when is the...
The goal is January 1st, right?
Yeah, that's what we'd like to shoot for.
January 1st of 2021.
Yeah. See, this... I cut out all these dates because they're redoing this right now. But so you didn't see the dates. Because they anticipated starting this back in October, which didn't happen. So we're behind pretty much 3 months when you look at this calendar. Because they didn't come here for that site visit till November.
Are they going to give us a discount for that?
Well, some of that was us. Not all of it was them.
Well, tell them it's their fault.
Yeah. So make sure I get this clear then. So we're still going to stay in with permits plus?
Well, we don't use it today. The only reason IT department's even keeping it alive is because the planning department has stuff on there of importance that they use to review applications.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So we're using Viewpoint right now.
Yeah.
And we'll continue using Viewpoint
up until
January, for hopefully.
Go live date would be the effect.
January 1st, 2020.
That all happens over a weekend. They'll, you know, one will shut down, the other will start up. That's how that works.
So all the work that you're doing now that's in, I'm getting no names.
So City View.
City View. Are we doing it once in City View, and that's transcending into this the new program too?
Oh, the City View is City View is new. Sorry,
so we don't do any work in the old software. Neither of the old softwares right now. All they do is, and I've already done this, is take the data from View Permit, and we dumped it over to them.
So what happens with new things between?
You get three data dumps. So you get the first one is your first crack, and then you're gonna, once they get into it, they're gonna start asking, where do you want this to go? How does this align in the new software? So you start directing the data.
I think the question is actually like when someone is,
your last data dump happens the Saturday night over the weekend.
But in 2020, if someone applies for a permit. From either of you,
it's in View Permit all the way till go live.
So you guys are continuing to use View Permit, and then you'll have a final data dump right before it goes live that'll transfer all that
over
information.
A weekend. So it happens in the middle of the night on a Saturday night. You shut View Permit off. They do the last data dump, and that brings over every inspection, everything we did the Friday before we clicked.
But you're not doing any double entry or anything like that.
That was my question.
During testing, you do. Absolutely. So when you're testing the software,
but you're not there
to
yet.
Break the software. And what you do is you run concurrent permits and planning applications simultaneously, like you're running them through View Permit. You see how it works. Yeah. But that data gets erased. Does that make sense? Anything you do during testing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got a lot of work left. There's no doubt about it. But we've made a good start here and made up some grounds since they were here in November. So.
And then one thing I would like to let y'all know about is, so the goal of this entire thing from the beginning is to use their out-of-the-box workflows, adjust our processes to meet the processes that are in the software, so you're not having to customize anything, which would create problems down the road. So their out-of-the-box review for planning departments is, I'm not going to say completely different, but 80% different than what we do currently. And it is going to add some more time to our review. But I just wanted to plant that seed. We're going to come back to you and discuss that more in depth to show what the difference between our current process and their process is, how much time would be added, and just all the details of the change in process. But that has been a goal from the beginning, and so that's a direction we're going with our planning review applications.
And the high level of that is really trying to make sure we have much more complete upfront applications to help them, the planners, move the project and application forward. And
when they have a complete application.
Yeah. Right. Don't move before, put the work on the applicant, and don't move until you've got that ready. So that
formalize the review as well for them. So that might be what might add some time, but it's a much better review process. So you're formalizing it, and they're getting all the letters and comments from all the external agencies, from all the departments, and then themselves, right? And that goes out in one complete packet versus a string of emails or string of letters, right? So that way the applicant gets one comprehensive full review and then can resubmit from that.
And then it's easier to track whose responsibility it is at that point in time. It's like, we've given you the plan review letter. It's your responsibility to get it back. All right, you've given us that back. Now it's our responsibility to do the review and get you comments back. So it's much more trackable. It's much more efficient. And it takes the pressure off of staff running around the day a staff packet is due and we just got a referral agency comment. So I think it's going to be a much better process for everybody.
That sounds good.
Even though it might add a little bit of time to it.
So I'm confused about what the adding a little bit of time is. What is that? I don't understand.
Because it doesn't, it'll, and we'll come back with you.
It's more time on the front end to get things right versus when something may be approved, there's all these conditions or things that we got to work out
on
after.
The permit or on each individual permit is what you're saying?
We're basically, right now, we get a complete application. Whether the quality of the application is good or not, we schedule it. This, the big change is we are not going to schedule it until we have every single bit of information that we need to complete our review.
You still didn't answer my question. How's the more time involved?
But that might add time because you're waiting until you get everything.
A little more time. I don't want to speak for you, but a little more time on the application. So, you know, you come in, there's going to be a person that's assigned to go down a checklist. Do they have everything per this application type?
I understand that.
Right now, so now we're going to ask, we're not going to move it into review. We're going to stall it. We're going to say, hey, this is incomplete. You need to give me, you know, utility plan, a site plan, and a drainage plan, just as an example. Okay, I'll get you that. A week goes by. They get us back these three plan sheets that Alan needs to do his job, and then he starts the review because now it's complete. So I think what he's trying to say is you would start the review and schedule a...
We would schedule it as soon as it's deemed complete, whether we had all the information or not.
Yeah.
The new way...
But not quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. In the new process, we're not going to schedule it until we have all of the information.
So I'm still struggling with the added time, because it seems like when they bring something back for the second and third time, that would have been added time at that point in time as well.
That's the front end time, and that's where the current system really is backloaded, right?
I can understand that, and I agree that it ends up being backloaded.
Right.
So but how it also much puts more it on front the, load time is going
to I think that
not
will depend. I know that you're going to hate this answer, but it's going to depend on the application and the applicant. So it's going to be case by case, but hopefully, you know, the idea is we would have a standard checklist that we go through, that they have everything and that they have addressed all of the concerns from all the internal departments. And then it's on them to address those concerns, and hopefully they answer all six of those concerns instead of three and getting it back. And that does happen. We see that with the red line review currently, where there's a lot of back and forth sometimes, and you know, we're providing them 10 items that need to be changed, and surveyors or whoever is handling the application, the representatives are giving us three out of the list, you know? So
I'll just give them to you now because I have them.
You guys could show them. I think what would help is show them the workflow.
Yeah.
And then you'll see where they can't schedule the hearing until they get to a certain point.
No, I'm totally understanding that part. And I can see the front loading of the time, too.
Yeah.
But it seems like the back loading of
the
time.
The hearing schedule is a big one, though. So right now, they're saying they schedule the hearing. Boom, right now. When they start a review.
Oh, that'll be an education opportunity.
Yeah.
It's not creating more work, though. It's not creating more work. It's just maybe extending the timeline because you don't schedule it until
right
it's
off
complete.
The bat. Yeah.
But it's not like you guys are doing a lot more work or it's taking a lot more of your time to do that.
But it's also helping staff, too. I mean, we sometimes have to call agencies numerous times to get comments, and we're getting them at the 11th hour for a staff report or after a staff report's already done.
Right.
And so this will help.
No, that sounds great.
And
onus back on the applicant as well.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a stick too, right? Where if they want to be scheduled, hopefully they're getting that.
You get your stuff in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these guys are in more of a pickle than us because we're able to establish policies, right, in our department, which every community development department has to honor. Right? Like, you need to complete this review in 5 working days. It's a policy internally, right?
Right.
To any jurisdiction I work with. These folks don't have that luxury. They're dealing with state agencies and all kinds of outside external agencies where, sure, they can say, hey, our policy is to complete this review in 10 working days, but they could blow them off and they have no, right? You have no leverage with them.
No.
So that's the challenging part.
And like I said, we're going to bring this back to you in a more complete discussion, and during that, we'll provide timelines and a calendar layout of our current process versus the proposed process so that you can see where that extra time may come from.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, again, like I said, extra time. It's just how you say it.
We're going to work on it, Doug. Yeah.
Don't call it extra time. And we'll
okay.
Yeah. Up front loaded.
We're front loading the process.
Okay.
All right.
Noted.
Yeah.
We'll work on that for you.
That kind of caps off the land management software, unless you guys
have sounds great.
And I'll keep you posted and updated, you know, as we move forward.
I'm going to venture a guess that this is not what the Munis software implementation looked like.
Good guess.
There's some similarities in terms of the overall structure.
Right.
Not really, no.
The complications.
I mean, I'm just seeing where we could have maybe prevented some of the challenges if we had done had a good project management plan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, some of it could be more challenging because you went from no software, right, to software. That's I mean, in the
in
city.
In some cases.
In some cases, because the city is definitely, like, when I'm sitting in these, I'm doubled up these sessions because we have a whole different solution down the street. But when I'm sitting in those meetings with someone that's never had software, they're just not, you know what I mean?
It's different.
It's the wheels start spinning. They're like, oh, my gosh, like, what do I do with this? With all these tools, and how do they work? And I think they get excited, but they get confused at the same point. Is that,
totally.
You know what I mean? All right, so end of the year, I'll just go through the...
All right, somebody y'all are done with us then.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you later. So some of these you've seen. I just pointed out some of the highlights. We almost hit 10,000 inspections. So that's 500 more than 18, which isn't surprising taking out school.
So before you leave the city view thing, I mean, so far, I mean, you've been approaching kind of, I mean, the glass half full, and you're happy with... you don't see any hiccups or anything?
No, not at all.
Don't
I think
have,
you
don't
just
have any buyer's remorse, and they told me.
No, it's been the reverse. We're actually seeing things in the back end that we didn't even know existed that are great.
Wow.
So it's like out of the box, this is a really strong database, strong software with a lot of options and tools, not just for staff, but the public, right? It's been impressive.
So
and
there are a lot
really,
of opportunities to even grow it even further in from inside.
Absolutely, because there's things that we don't offer right now as a service or a product or a permit that we're turning off that we can at any moment turn back on.
Sounds great. So, I like all of that. I mean,
so you know, it's a true land management software that you can grow into. And there's even other modules that we didn't buy, like the city bought the licensing, right? For liquor and special event and marijuana, dog, animal licensing. There's a lot of features in here. And every time you add one of those modules, the code enforcement module hits all those too if you wanted it to, right? So you don't have to update that. You're just turning
things. So since the building department, the primary buyer, and then they just bought a portal on the thing, right? I mean,
the cloud.
The city purchasing.
They bought their own.
They have their own license then.
Their own system.
Their own system. We share ownership in that asset through the permitting module.
Okay.
It's in the code enforcement module, which we also use. Yeah.
So we will own one and the city owns one.
Yeah. But we share.
And through the building department,
yeah.
We share.
Yeah.
It's connected at the building department.
Yeah.
At the hip, yeah.
But two screens all day long, which actually, the farther you dig in the software, I'm so glad that we did not try to get one software to fix both government associations. We are fortunate we made that decision and cut it off and said, no, we're going to have two separate because it is completely two different environments. You know what I mean?
No, yeah. You can move on. I apologize.
Okay.
I wanted to get a little bit better the feel of the... The buyer's
but remember, I did have to go through this right before I came here. So for 2.5 years, I was going through the implementation with the seller from Permits Plus. But I can tell you my feedback, and it's so much more positive working with CityView than working with the seller brand, because the seller hired a third party to do these remote data collection sessions that we're having right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the service level is completely night and day.
Wow.
Compared to what we're getting for customer service.
Good to know.
So, that's good reference for them, too.
Yeah.
Okay, now you can go on to where you were going.
Yeah, so anyway, we had close to 10,000 inspections. We had 753 total building permits. That's up from 702 and 18. So that includes Hayden, Yamba, Oak Creek, the 92 single-family dwellings constructed, up from 75 and 18. So that's everything but the city, right? So we were up a little shy of 20. City of Steamboat Springs had 45. They're down from 79, and that's just because we ran out of lots, right? Sunlight failed up. So, but on the flip side of that, multifamily dwelling units increased by 89 because we had none in 18. So they're creating units, right? And actually, to be quite honest, more affordable units if you want to say that what Fox Springs is, right, compared to what you'd pay for a home up in Sunlight. So that's good. I mean, there's bad there. You don't ever want to not have a supply of residential lots ready to build on. I can tell you that. At least that's what I've been taught. But they made up with it with these multifamily. So we at least still are getting some new dwelling units. But I still, I mean, whoever wrote that article this weekend is exactly what, basically what I sent Council and Gary about lack of supply. That was a realtor that wrote that this weekend, right? So you read that article, I'm sure.
Yep.
And it's still driving costs up. He's projecting the
cost. I think they said there were, what, like 30 homes in Steamboat under single-family homes under $1 million.
It's
21.
Lack of supply.
It was a really small number.
And then that drives the cost of the Hayden lots and homes up as well. Don't tell me it doesn't. I mean, we play, this is the core of the county, right?
Yeah.
Commercial industrial buildings, Steamboat, we're at 4. Round County area had 10, which is mostly Hayden. Right?
Sorry, I have a question. The multifamily dwelling units, I assume that includes like the housing authorities project,
yes,
right?
Yep.
And I assume that's a significant number of those.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So then we had commercial buildings, gave you a little peek there. Alteration permits, we had 313, so we were up from 286 in 18. 130 commercial alterations countywide, that's up 127 compared to 18. We did see quite a bit of commercial activity last year. And then total construction value countywide is up, 17 million roughly? And then just to give you a quick idea of what's to come, we're working on the terminal project at the airport, the hospital expansion, the emergency room. The school came in last week. We met with them. So we got
Steamboat School.
Steamboat Schools. I'm still not certain if we're going to get the new school, but we are getting all the other projects for sure. That's the ones that we discussed. So addition at the high school, addition at the middle school, addition at the elementary school, addition at Soda Creek, the other elementary, so both elementary.
And North Route, right?
And the admin and North Route, yeah. All of which mostly roll in the door April, March, and then August and September for the other phases. Yeah, the new school, they're reviewing what I gave them last week. Met with Pascal. He had some questions about services we provide that the state doesn't during review, during inspections, and then cost. And, you know, since the, was 52 million, the paper said, roughly, the new school out here, it's pretty close to what Hayden was.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave them just projected numbers of what we did for them just to paint a picture of where we'd be at for plan review and inspections.
Yep. And so they have a choice of whether to use the local building department or the state?
Schools do, yeah.
Okay.
Always have a choice.
And they often don't use the local building department because it's easier to go through the state. You just don't get as many inspections. You just keep rolling.
See, they hire, the state doesn't come and do the building inspections. So NB5, or whoever the consulting company would be, right, hires a special inspector, a consultant to come and do these inspections. They do a lot less inspections and they cost a lot more than our inspections per inspection. So there's some differences to weigh out there.
And so then, when are they going to let you know?
And
then are you going to have enough staff? Or are you going to have to staff up for that?
Well, the problem with the school projects is that right now it's just Don, Ted, and myself that are actually certified.
Yep.
So that can put me in an awkward position, or Don, right? And Ted, we can't let him out of the office very often. Otherwise, specifically during the spring and summer with reviews, right?
Yeah.
So that's, but the advantage is it is in town, so I can go out and do these inspections fairly quickly and easy.
On 42 is in town?
Well, that.
The remodels you're talking about.
The remodels, the additions. They're not remodels, they're all additions.
Yeah.
But that's in town compared to Hayden.
It's 15 minutes. That one, Don could catch a lot. Like, I'm not so worried about the new school. And trust me, that even if it gets going this year, it's probably mostly moving dirt and infrastructure.
They're expecting to open in 2021.
Yeah, I believe that. They said this last time. So they came into the Hayden School and said, yeah, we'll have your plans to you, you know, next month. And we got them 4 months later.
Yeah.
So the design world isn't that fast. Like, I don't know how they I think this evolves. But that was my experience working on the Hayden School.
Right.
Yeah. And this can't be much different because they just found out they had money, right, through the voting process. So there wasn't any drawings done, right? No consultant hired.
No, they had a consultant way before that.
Schematic.
Yeah. Come up with their numbers. Conceptual on the visual level. Yeah, they come up with the numbers. When you get into the structural and the code, yeah, that's where it takes
time. They should be further along than just starting from the election.
I got you.
But they're still taking public input. I mean...
Yeah, they got these... Yeah, and I don't know if that's just for show or... It must be, because if you're moving forward with design... And you're still meeting with the public. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So neighbors are thinking they have input over where the entrances are.
And right.
I think that's about the extent of what their input is right now.
Where the entrance is at?
Yeah, where the
where the bathrooms are at, or
no traffic flow. You know, just through like Steamboat 2 and
Brad definitely referenced like thinking about where they put the parking in reference to where the public might enter for evening events and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I think that's about the exterior. Yeah. It's more the exterior than the interior.
I mean, it will certainly evolve like this. There'll be a grade and fill permit for excavation and infrastructure. They'll still be doing design work. Then it'll evolve into a foundation, and they'll still be doing architectural and MEPs and everything. Yeah, if they're going to meet that demanding schedule they published in the paper, that's the only way that it would possibly work. But. And then the boutique hotel, I reached out to Eric Smith. That might be confidential. He hasn't responded, but I'm probably the only building official in this world that actually, like, reaches out, like, fishes, when are you going to have this in here? Because I don't want to get a log jam, or I want to know, do I have to utilize a consultant? You know what I mean? So he might end up just calling me and letting me know. But I probably wouldn't. I have a feeling that's going to be confidential, if he even lets me know. So that would be the other big project that I'd have some concerns about if it rolled in the spring. And we are working with Sunlight Crossings, right, Jason, and the Housing Authority. So we've already met with them on that new project over here at the bottom of Sunlight Drive. So that'll be rolling in, too. Probably, what did they say, May, June? So
that sounds great.
Yep. It's going to be another busy year. From what I'm hearing from consultants is they're finally ahead of the contractors, which that rarely happens, right?
Because there's not enough contractors.
Not enough contractors. We had a bad winter. Everybody's behind, and we're having another heavy winter. Yeah. So.
As long as it doesn't keep snowing in June, we'll probably be up there.
Right, yeah. Any other questions on the...
I was surprised the evaluation for Route County versus the city. Is that Route County number?
Yeah, I was surprised by that,
too. Does that include Hayden, Old Creek, and Yamput as well, or is that just the rural...
So total, this one, on the mini kit recap?
No, it's
single-family dwelling.
Single-family dwelling construction
valuation.
Anyhow, I'm just surprised. I mean, it kind of goes back to your comment of inventory. How we haven't any inventory.
Okay, so year-to-date, Steamboat is $30 million, right?
Yeah.
And county is?
48.
Yeah, that's just
numbers. So county is everything except Steamboat,
that's right. Yeah, but that's back to those numbers I... The highlights, right, today. Where did I put that? Sorry.
It's the number of single-family homes that were constructed.
So Steamboat had 45. That's down from almost 80 the year before, 79.
Wow.
So that's the big difference.
That's why
we were up, right? So the county was the reverse. We increased. We had 92, and the year before in 18 we had 75.
I mean, is it a combination of the number of lots and, like, the available contractors?
No, there's no supply here. I mean, Sunlight filled up almost last year. So they had 75 lots. They were at 60.
I was just wondering if the price point is getting saturated. You know, like, it's getting too expensive to, you know, maybe, no.
No, it's supply. I mean, I've never in my life ever seen a community with no buildable lots, like a development ready to go.
Yeah.
Never. I don't know.
Great.
At least in my experience as a contractor, developer, and then working at a municipality in the city. I mean, our city manager, it was a priority
to constantly have
residential developments underway with buildable lots and of all different flavors. And, I mean, I would spend hours and hours running numbers for him for TIF, you know, funds, right, to go into these developments for infrastructure and then make sure we had the right flavor. How many lots are there? What is my projected 10-year build-out going to be per, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So we know if we can pay back that TIF money. But yeah, I don't know. That's just where I came from, what I'm used to seeing. That was like that up in Minnesota too. But and I pointed this out to Gary and the council, you know, early summer, because I said you could see what was happening, because the same thing happened in 07, right? They hit this peak in the construction economy, right, when it was booming, and they didn't have any lots then either.
Oh,
and the
that,
same
yeah.
thing happened where they had one strong year and then they went back down because there was no supply. And then that drives costs up even farther mm-hmm. in the middle of a peak, right? And, yeah, I don't know.
Hey, hey, hey. That's what I say.
But then, you know, that
we're just going to build a gate on top. I don't know if you heard. We're going to build a gate on top of Rabbit Ears, and then we don't need any more houses.
Okay.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Put a couple of covered wagons up there across Highway 40.
So I'll keep you updated as the land management software project, you know, keeps moving along. No, I'll provide
good.
You my monthly updates yeah. when I do work sessions.
That was really helpful. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yep.
And this month I will be a little, it will not be until next week that I get you probably my update because of these sessions. But
it's all good.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Come on up, Emmy. Are you,
computering?
Yes.
Put on the...
Do you know how to do it?
We're going to figure it out.
All right. I mean, we can get Deanna. I think you just have to plug that in. Do you know where they are? They're in the top drawer over here, I think. Or there's a basket on the end of the desk.
Yeah, just making me a little nervous when Alan says we think she needs
more time. Yeah. Well, I think that was the clarification, right? He doesn't mean staff time. He means the process.
I'm glad I asked the question.
Yeah, me too.
Make any sense? He said, well, you already have people over there. We're wondering what you're doing now. So what?
Oh, I'm with you.
How are we going to do that?
I heard that...
Are we turning this on?
I have no idea what's going on. Is it already going?
The commissioners would like to hear what is going on in the GIS department. And so that's what this presentation is for. The presentation is kind of structured off of our current strategic plan in place. And so you'll see these our mission categories kind of following our strategic plan as well. So here's our vision. Here, I'm not going to read everything word for word. Do you guys have time to review it prior?
I reviewed it.
Okay.
Yep.
So our mission is kind of like our foundation for our department and what holds our department up. That includes the GIS data coordination, enterprise geospatial infrastructure, GIS client services, our GIS staff, the GIS management, regional collaboration, and supporting the county's strategic goals there. So we'll go through each of these through the presentation. So our GIS data is as much of an asset as our other assets in the county. It's something that's not tangible right away. You don't see it sitting in the parking lot or on a piece of property, but there is value to it, and we need to maintain it and take care of it just as our other assets that we have in the county.
So we need to be better at being able to know what's there and being able to use it as well.
I would agree with that.
So, and again, I appreciate you coming and visiting us, because we need, probably it's an underutilized tool of ours as well. So, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. And with that being said, while the data itself is certainly a capital asset, the software that goes with it is pretty powerful as well, and a tool that can be used across most departments.
And is that, I apologize, this is kind of a naive question, but GIS is, I mean, I saw you log in and whatever, is it kind of a subscription-based software? Do we have a local version of it, or how does it work?
In the last 10 years, and we'll kind of get into that towards the end here, the software structure has changed significantly. 10 years ago, it was mostly installed locally on individual machines, and we had some pretty powerful power users who knew the software, knew how to use it. The trend today in GIS is more of a democratization and accessible to anybody. So we have kind of a hybrid of your question. The powerful end of the software is installed on a server network, and we connect to that, get it to our data through that and everything. Now our power users are using the locally installed software, which mostly is the GIS department at this time. And now our just kind of lay users are using more of the web environment. But the web environment for the power users is also providing some powerful stuff. This whole presentation was built in the GIS software. And so like these maps are interactive on here. You know, you can't do this in PowerPoint, and you can still interact with the maps through these presentations. This is called a story map. So,
but you presented us that story map when we talked about the PDR.
Yes, that's a story map as well.
Yeah. And I know there's been some discussion about using story maps for master plan conversations as well.
Yeah. So some of our foundation data includes geodetic control, which is our public land survey system, our townships and ranges all the way down through sections and lots, etc. Cadastral, which is our land records and parcel and subdivisions are in there. Our imagery, at this time we don't manage or pay for any of our own imagery. We use what's provided through our software provider and the federal government as well. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Other foundation data includes administrative units, which is our municipal boundaries, as well as special district boundaries, and our transportation layers, such as the road center lines. One really fun piece of newer foundation data is our LIDAR data that was flown in 15 and 16, paid for by the state of Colorado, and this has really opened up some
fun and new uses in the last couple of years. The survey community has really appreciated us housing and offering this data to them as well. It's an economic benefit to them as well. So some of the uses for this include the snow load modeling that we've done for the building department. We'll take a look at that in a little bit. Planning regulation enforcement, we can show the different slopes throughout the county, and they can quickly say whether it's greater. I think it's 20% is their regulation, and then they have to go into more stipulations. So that's a really fun piece of data that we've acquired in the last couple of years.
What is LIDAR?
It is a form of the way that it's collected, and it's essentially flying with a radar. The airplane flies with radar and sends down a signal, and then it times getting that signal back, and then they run a bunch of calculations on it, and it gives you different elevation models. So, for instance, the gray that we're looking at here is the actual surface elevation model. You can program it to look at more of a they call it first return, but you can actually make the trees stick out and the buildings come to life and everything with this data. That's pretty powerful.
So this is ground data. This
one is ground, right? The one we're looking at right here is yeah, ground. But the data came with all of the returns, so we do have that building data and everything as well. So some of our business data that we maintain, this is more focused directly for specific business needs within the county, include our address points, our 911 data, our land use data, which would include zoning and skyline regulations, et cetera, precinct data, and our critical infrastructure for emergency services. One specific business data layer that's pretty interesting is our road and bridge assets. A number of years ago, we took the time to go out and collect all of the road signs, cattle guards, guardrail, and road types. We have it all captured in the GIS data, including condition and reflectivity, for instance, and now it can be easily maintained either from a mobile device or the desktop down in the road and bridge office there.
One cool thing, well, before you go move on, is that we just saw a demo on ERP Munis and work orders and asset management. And now in this latest version, they've got a component that's GIS-based. So really, if we're performing work orders, similar to what we would do as a help desk ticket or whatever, on signs, cattle guards, or anything like that, it can be maintained with the GIS component in there, which we really hadn't thought about putting GIS into ERP, but in the big picture, the 10-year thing, I mean, that's certainly a possibility, and you can go all the way down to building maintenance and things like that. So when Reese talking about his asset management and things like that and work orders, a lot of the core base data has been collected.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you said, underutilized, but it's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
So just as I kind of alluded to this earlier, as we maintain our other assets in the county, it's important that we continue to maintain our data and keep it updated and have quality control measures in place for it. For instance, the sign data would be no good if we didn't maintain what's been replaced, if we didn't manage that database. And, you know, in another 10 years, it's useless to us. So why did we spend all that time at a certain point collecting that? So it's pretty critical that we not only collect the data, but we maintain it through its life as well. And one point here is we're currently updating our address data maintenance or management to be more efficient, and I think we're going to be able to involve the three towns, Hayden, Oak Creek, and Yampa, in that maintenance a little better. They contribute because that ultimately goes to the 911 center. So I'm pretty excited about getting them a little bit more involved with their address maintenance. And then later this year, we'll be embarking on upgrading our land records, which is our parcels and subdivisions, et cetera, to make it more efficient and have some more quality control rules set on it. That's going to be a pretty huge endeavor for us, but in the long run, we're going to see a lot of value out of that project.
So does
municipality is like city. Does Steamboat have a GIS?
They have a very strong GIS as well, pretty similar to ours, and so they can manage and contribute their data to us. The three towns have no GIS capabilities.
That's
what Jason used to do at the city, right?
Yes.
Yeah. My husband worked with him over there.
But one thing is, they maintain all their infrastructure like this except for parcels. So right now, we maintain the parcels for the whole county. And really, that's a support of a state mandate, you know, a requirement that the assessor maintain a current tax roll. So they default to our parcel layer, but maintain their own addresses and street center lines and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So as we discussed earlier, last year, we did a huge overhaul of the GIS infrastructure, servers and everything, as well as the software, really modernizing the software and bringing us to current standards. This is allowing us to provide more services to these softwares, as Robert said. The more softwares we bring in, whether it's land management, ERP, anything at the comm center, typically has a GIS component. So this structure is really... put us in a better position to serve all of these different needs, as well as opening up the web GIS component and really opening GIS to more of our employees as well.
So back to the cities, the other towns other than Steamboat that don't, and they do their own addressing, is that correct?
Yes, they do. They are in charge. It's their jurisdiction to manage the addressing. But again, they don't have the GIS capabilities, so they tell us what they've done, and we update our GIS so that can go into 911.
So is that going to stay that way forever, or what?
I could see if they ever had the resources to implement a stronger GIS system, they could potentially be similar to the city of Steamboat.
You'd be able to download or whatever?
Yeah, we would collaborate with them on that. But at the moment, I don't see them having the resources anytime soon.
Is there any kind of benchmark around, you know, what size a municipality typically has their own GIS function?
It's probably more of a budget thing. Having the skill in-house, and
right.
B, how much of the software they can afford to manage as well.
But, I mean, they can hire the skill in-house if they...
They could, or they could even contract it out as well if they wanted to.
With
a private contractor. There's a handful of contractors that would do that for them.
Around here?
Not in the county, but there's a few in state. And
I imagine it's probably one of those things you can work at home at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As long as you have internet.
Yeah. But it's important to note at this point in time, we're feeding the 911 systems, and so it's only a benefit to everybody that we help them with that. Critical data as well.
We'll have to remember to thank our voters that we do that.
There you go. We will. I'll leave that to you, Doug.
So a huge component to our division is our client services. We're an internal service. We're here to serve all of the departments in the county. And you know, it's critical that we create a customer service oriented approach and have good satisfaction with our customers. So some fun things that we've done recently or have created efficiencies throughout the county include the building department snow load map. We just launched this last month, and this is going to take a minute to load here. But prior to this application, contractors or whomever, engineers, would have to call into the building department, and they'd kind of go back and forth on their building location and blah, blah, blah. And then Ted would give them their snow load calculation number. Now they can use this. This is open to the public. They can zoom into their site, click on the site, and within less than a minute here, we've got our snow load calculation for them to continue their engineering for the roof loads. So that project is pretty exciting. This one has been around for a little while, the Sheriff Civil Zones. When you order civil service, I'm not sure exactly how that process works, you do need to pay them to deliver that civil service. And so this has created the zones for that delivery. So you would find your address where you're ordering that civil service. And once again, click on here. And to deliver within this zone, it's $6.38. So both, this is again open to the citizens. They can go in and find this fee, as well as our civil deputy. She uses this daily.
Definitely not recouping our costs on that $6.38.
Right. Probably not in staff time, but in mileage. Right.
And then of course we're all
good point. When last time that was updated?
Updated, yeah.
And we're all familiar with the public GIS website, so I won't go into this too much other than not only is this a benefit for internal employees, but also a great community benefit. The realtors use this all the time. If there's a problem on it, I immediately get phone calls from realtors.
Nights and weekends, whenever.
Yeah.
You
know, they can create mailing lists. The thing they love on here is if they put a new listing in a subdivision, they can come in here and select all of the parcels in under a minute in that subdivision, spit out a mailing list Excel file, and quickly send out their postcards that of their advertisement there.
That's why I get letters in the mail.
Yes.
Realtors all the time.
Yep. Right. Yep. It's coming from, it's more than likely coming from this site here as well. So we also have an elections solution. It's not open to the public, so we can't look at it here. But to help them get their state address records in line with our local authoritative address records. 5 years ago, they would go through paper, and it was just a mess of a process. Now they can easily log into an application similar to these and quickly get the data they need and transfer it over to the election addressing system there. So they're pretty excited about that as well. So this is just a list of some of the services that we provide to different departments. I think the important thing to note here is that the emergency services have, our GIS services have nearly doubled in the last 3 years. It seems like particularly in the emergency service world, any new software that's brought in has a GIS component to it. And so a lot of that in the last 3 years has been put on to our department to manage there as well. Land records is currently getting updated, and while we provide a service now, I think we're going to provide even more service through the new software that is coming. And I only see this list growing, as Robert mentioned, as we get more into the ERP in the future. And, you know, if Road and Bridge were to ever get into a more robust software, there's definitely going to be GIS components to that as well.
What do you think on the master plan update that GIS's role should be in there? And I mean, I don't feel like we have the expertise in-house to leverage what we already have. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That it almost should be
like contracted out for analysis, or
I wouldn't think that. I think that
should, just to know what we should do.
Yeah, it should be on your radar and also be a resource to that team building that as for the GIS. Component.
I would say a couple. I mean, I have a couple of thoughts, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. I mean, I think first of all, maybe that's something for us to be considering as we put our RFP out for a planning consultant, is someone who would be familiar, not to be able to do it, but mm-hmm. to know what to ask for. Right.
Coordinate with you.
Right. And then I think.
Like a piece of that would be, are you familiar with GIS? Are you willing to use GIS capabilities throughout this process?
Right. Yeah. And I, the way I understand it, kind of pictured it is, I mean, obviously in the planning process, which I don't fully understand, but in the public engagement process, some of that story map kind of stuff of like, here's a map of what it might look like in X number of years, and let's talk about that and give input on that. Those kinds of things are my understanding about how GIS could be used. I mean, what else you?
Is the story map going to look forward, or is it going to look at things you've done? I'm just thinking about the one you did for PDR, you know, that it's more about here's the story of what
it can go either way, really, because we have our current data, which is kind of backward looking. But in this scenario, if we
you can project,
and let's say the West Steamboat stuff comes in with some data for us on proposed buildings, we can put that into the GIS now and get an idea of what it might look like or whatever. Yes. So
and you could definitely project then like services. I mean, I see it more around services and some of those questions.
Yeah, transportation would be a huge
infrastructure
one.
More so than, you know, oh my gosh, it's, there's more. It's like, well, what are you going to do with the more?
Right, impacts on services, road areas, transportation, like you said.
Yeah. So not only can we provide an analysis component to a plan such as that, but we can also provide a GIS, or I mean a presentation and kind of almost transparency format for these kind of projects as well.
Are you guys integrated into the water permits? Ground?
No.
Wells?
That's a great question.
No. So the state.
How to say this nicely.
Yes. They struggle to have a coordinated central GIS coordination for all of the state departments. Some are doing really well. Some are still 10 years back on the GIS. The Water Division is one of those where I would still need to go to their website and download the well data periodically, where ideally I could just connect to their data and it always be there. I don't have to remember to go refresh it and such. So,
but in theory, if it was something we wanted to look at for a specific purpose,
you could
pull it and we could layer it over or whatever.
Everything current today.
I could ask them how current they feel it is, So on to our staff. There's three of us in the department, and the two pillars there are our GIS analysts. Jason is the addressing coordinator and manages all of the 911 GIS projects. As I mentioned, those have kind of ballooned in the last 3 years, and that's his area of responsibility, is really taking care of the comm center and what their needs are. Laura is in charge of our land records and works really closely with the assessor's department as managing parcels and subdivisions and such. So she does really well at that. All of us take day-to-day tasks, whatever comes in the door for different map requests or project management. We'll see who's available for that as well. I take on both a manager role and an operations role in that I'm in charge of the IT infrastructure and the spatial database, and the database administrator as well. And then there's the manager side, more of the budget and assigning work and setting goals and et cetera. It's critical that we keep training on an annual basis. As we've discussed, the technology changes rapidly from year to year even, and so it's important that we stay up on the advances in the, our area. So at this time, our budget allows for us to attend one conference and two classes annually. That's pretty sufficient at this time. I would really hate to lose any of that right now. We're kind of at a good place with our training budget right now. We also uphold the GIS Code of Ethics, and we will not go through those right now, but we do review those on an annual basis in our office. Just touching.
So, what does that say in a broad perspective?
Code of Ethics. I think one of the biggest things is not to use GIS for your advantage or whatever. Am I going to try and make money on the side if I do this? Or we've got redistricting coming up within the next 18 months, and not taking political sides with that project, stuff like that. I really like the ethics because they took more of a positive approach. It's not rules of you can't do this. It's more stay in this this area here. So, we can discuss those more at another time if you'd like.
How do people become certified in GIS? I mean, is it a degree specifically, or is it?
So there are plenty of degrees out there for GIS. Yeah. They're typically embedded in another program, such as a planning program. So you'll get a planning degree with an emphasis in GIS, or maybe an IT degree, and you just happen to end up in the GIS world. So that's coming out with a degree. Then there is the GIS professional certification, which is through the National ERISA group, and that's our national GIS group, and they set the standards on how to get that certification. It takes you a number of years outside of college to qualify for that. Just a little bit more about GIS management. I really see my position as pushing for change. Again, I've hit on it a number of times. Our technology changes rapidly, and so it's my job to be that change manager and change influencer and get all of our users to recognize the new technology and use it for their efficiencies as well. Also managing the strategic plan and revising that every 3 to 5 years, and monitoring customer satisfaction with, as well as metrics that can be incorporated into our budget annually. And I just mentioned the census. Do you want me to go through this more detailed, or did you have time to read through this?
I read
on
it.
What my responsibility. Yeah. Any questions on what I do for the census? We're kind of in the 2020 phase right now. We had a discussion at the last census group meeting that my office most certainly is open to any of the census employees, census takers, to come in and ask questions on different addresses or locations that they need help with. We will make ourselves more than available for that function throughout the year here.
So are the, I guess my question about these roles is, are these mandatory roles for the county, or is this kind of outside of that?
There's not, it's not really mandatory. You can kind of, it's kind of an elected to do. So during the 2019 phase, which was established where to account phase, I mentioned that Hayden, Oak Creek, and Yampa elected not to participate in that directly. They kind of defaulted to the county. We could have done the same. I know that Moffitt County defaulted to the state. So if a lower if a lower level government chooses to not participate for whatever reason, they don't have the resources or whatever, it will go up to the next level of government. And again, if they don't participate, then ultimately the state or the feds are
doing
responsible.
What? I don't understand.
So in 2019, we had a huge effort of updating all possible housing units within the county. So giving them new addresses for new houses in the last 10 years, identifying the group housing, such as dorms and such, as well. So I worked with the towns, you know, for instance, in Oak Creek, the motel over the last 10 years have been converted from a nightly rental to long-term rental or something similar.
Yeah.
So it's critical that we got that hotel put on the map, or the motel, so that census workers would know to swing by there if needed.
Right. So, like, if you didn't provide that data, they'd get it at the state level.
Possibly, but that's
if they have
as
the information.
Go up,
yeah, they have less information.
Less, yeah.
So it's certainly in our best interest to get as an accurate account as possible. You know what I mean? To get those numbers out there.
Yeah. So once again, we have no problem working closely with the three towns to help them out where we could, because ultimately it helps
benefits
the county
too,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've hit on this a little bit today as well, regional GIS collaboration. We do have a good relationship with the city of Steamboat Springs and have a good data sharing setup with them. We've hit on what we do for the towns and kind of mentioned some of the local economy as well, providing our data out to surveyors and realtors and whoever can use it as an economic driver. For the valley, if the surveyor doesn't have to spend an extra 5 hours getting elevation points because he uses the LIDAR data immediately, he can keep moving and be more efficient in his day. Next Generation 911 is on our radar, and we are more than willing and prepared to work with any of our neighbors in the region on that project. I don't think it's going to happen in the next year or two, but certainly something to be on the lookout for in the next 5 years. And we are more than happy to work with the state of Colorado in pushing up our authoritative data to them, such as the parcel layers and address points, and hopefully they then disperse that out to their many different departments. And they really have done a better job in the last 5 years of doing that. We used to, you know, annually get a call from CDOT and DOLA and et cetera. Can we have your data? Now we can give it to the central GIS office and they do a better job of pushing it out. They also use it for emergency situations. If they're going to come in on a state fire, a wildfire or something, they've got it already preloaded into their systems for that as well. So we support our healthy and safe community. This past year, we provided the data for the all hazards plan. It's still in the works. And looking forward, we look at developing some plan for when we are assisting in emergency responses and having some guidelines in the EOC and what we can do in the first 48 hours to be better prepared to support that effort.
You have the ability to, I mean, if we don't have internet and don't have ability and somewhere out in the field and you're...
So in my office, we have a go bag that has a hard drive with our critical data, our addresses and parcels and roads
on
there.
That's the right answer. That's a good answer.
That's
what I want to hear.
Yeah,
I mean, we talk about hazard planning and the rest and resilience. And yet we're all dependent upon the internet.
Right. So, yeah, the go bag has that hard drive. Just throw the laptop in it. It's got all the supplies that we need so that we can run in and run out really quick with that.
Good. Well,
and looking forward into 2020, we also are looking at or are open to working with our different health departments, environmental health and public health on any mapping or community engagement products like a story map or whatever we can provide for them as well. What you're looking at in the background here is an application that I built last spring for Mo to monitor the flooding. So if these are floodgates here or monitors, and when they turn yellow or red, you know the river's rising and it might be action time. So he can peek at that every morning and see what's going on.
Over coffee.
Yep.
It's great.
Yep.
As long as he has internet.
Land use, we've talked about the PER mapping that we did. Looking forward, we've discussed the planning and what we can do for them in the coming year here. I'd also like to work with the new weed manager and providing some more mobile solutions for what they're doing as well and provide some efficiencies for them. You may have seen my email earlier last month for a GIS brown bag lunch kind of training. I'm going to try and make an effort to do that on a monthly basis with a different topic. Some will be the higher level, like the website training. Some are going to be some deep dives for more of our power users as well there. So how are we doing? Again, back to we mentioned ERISA. It's our national GIS group that's kind of set standards across the board. And they've developed these models here for self-assessment. Points that are closer into the middle of the web here are places where we can do some work. We need some work. And the farther out is that's a strong point in our program.
So what the blue line is what?
The blue is from 2017 assessment, and the orange line is from late 2019 assessment.
And so what in the outside parameter is what?
Is if you're digging out here, you are doing well, you've implemented that plan, it's pretty much in daily operation mode.
Okay.
If you're digging here, you have no plan, and you're kind of winging it with it there. So again, you can see we made some improvements the last 2 years. And then on this one, we still have got a lot of work to do. And I think the bottom line here is balancing our workload with what we can deliver. And if we really wanted to increase and implement plans to hit on all cylinders here, we'd probably need to look at adding some manpower to the department as well. So did you guys have any questions on either of those at all?
Well, now that I know what they are, I have a little more ability to understand.
No, not right now.
Okay. I think that's great. Thank you.
Okay. And so I'll use both those assessments to refresh the strategic plan going forward here, and you know, again, focusing on the weaker points and trying to make some strides.
So,
there.
Who determined the criteria for determining good and bad on those things?
So it was a self-assessment.
So I understand that.
And you go
that.
Through a worksheet that says, and it kind of gives you some pointers. Have you developed a plan? Have you even thought of this? Have you? Okay, you've thought of it. Have you developed a plan? Have you implemented the plan? Is it fully implemented? Or kind of the steps there from the middle to the outside.
And it sounds like it's their professional organization.
Yeah.
That's what I was asking.
Oh, okay. So group, about 10 years ago, a group within this professional...
Created the standards, in essence.
Yes. Yeah.
So to speak.
King County, Washington had probably the biggest hand. They have a very large GIS organization. And had probably the most influence on creating this.
It's a big county.
Yeah. So where are we going in the future? We're kind of there now with the web GIS. I mentioned everybody can use it now. Mobile data collection is a very real thing and something that can create some efficiencies across all departments. And having open data for citizen engagement, not only for possibly downloading data, but transparency as well. We talked about the PDR. They can now visually see where that money is going and the costs and everything there. Data sharing and collaboration becomes easier every year. Before, we used to have to mail hard drives to each other. And now we can just send each other an electronic password to get into each other's databases. So it's becoming super easy. All the scuttlebutt is always about drones, and they're here, and they're a tool that are being used by some agencies for different things, whether it's accident investigation or maybe monitoring an environmental situation as well. Big data analytics is trend right now, and it's going to be here forever. They're using it, for instance, in monitoring the coronavirus across the world, and down on a more local scale for monitoring traffic patterns and such. In the near future, we're going to see more AI and machine learning, and you hear this everywhere, but some of this is going to take some of the job as well and make things more efficient. And quick make processes more fast, if you will. I really think that remote sensing and imaging is going to become more attainable. Doug was here a number of years ago when we looked at pictometry and the costs of doing that, and it's for the size of our county, it's a little bit out of reach, but I really think...
Don't worry, the assessor already told me all about it.
Well, he got to go there. I really think, aside from pictometry, there's going to be some more affordable and attainable ways to get remote or aerial photos on a more current cycle than what we can get right now. Internet of Things, everybody's got devices everywhere that's connected to the internet, and we'll start seeing those feed into different analysis, whether it's crash detection. We're seeing that now in the comm center, and all the way to...
Crash detection in the comm, but you mean auto crash?
Yeah. That it automatically calls 911 and sends the location information to them.
But you have to have a newer car than...
It's actually
1990s.
What I'm seeing is it's an app on your phone that detects a certain amount of velocity or velocity. And so then it's automatically calling dispatch, and then they're like, oh. And then you get there, and it's not really a bad crash or a crash at all. So there's that. We have the air quality monitoring system. That's an IoT piece there as well. And then cloud computing, I think we probably in the next 10 years won't have local GIS resources here. They'll probably be all in the cloud running somewhere that's not here.
That's all fine and dandy if you trust who's running it.
If you have access
to
it.
You might not have a choice.
So any questions on all of that?
So I guess question for you. So, using the GIS and the master plan, we need to talk about that a little bit. What opportunities there might be out there. And then that also assumes that you're going to have different rules for different places as well, potentially. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be helpful that, I don't know, you mentioned expertise and where that comes from, and I don't know if within your department there's expertise, or we need to be looking at, I mean, who could really give us an idea of what that might look like so that we could kind of determine.
I'm not saying no or whatever.
Absolutely.
I'd like to know what those opportunities might be out there. If you guys have some people out there that in your GIS world.
How soon are you looking at hiring a consultant?
Well, we haven't been awarded funds from DOLA yet, which I think we're expecting probably April-ish.
Oh, okay.
So it wouldn't be till.
So why don't I do a little bit of research here in the next month?
Yeah, whoever you're progressing.
What's out there? And
most
I'll get back
advanced
to you with
friends
that.
Or something.
I mean, I would think that we would be able to be a large resource for the consultant. Like, instead of paying for them to provide these GIS services, we would ask them to engage our GIS department and our services as
right.
far as the story of that. You know what I mean?
But even in preparation for that, if there's a way for us to understand the potential that GIS might bring to those efforts, I think that could be really helpful.
That's kind of where I was headed.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can dig up somebody else's story map or something, and I'll
see
send it
if there's some examples I can do.
Yeah, I'll get done.
You know, I wonder, too, if so we had some technical assistance from DOLA. They have planners who do, and I wonder if they would even just be a resource for here's somebody who's used it or done it or some examples.
Yeah. Yep.
They would be. They have demographers and everything else.
And the reason why I asked about the water, the exempt well status would be from the division engineer would be, and it's
helpful.
Very much needed, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. What is that, the exempt well status? So they can drill a well without a permit?
Yeah, well, they have a permit, but it's exempt from the water regulations. So there is one, it allows them to have a house well.
Oh.
So
without going through the permitting process or something?
Well, it means there's a house there, probably.
Okay.
Exempt well.
What is it exempt from, I guess?
That's kind of what I was just trying
to say. So it's exempt from the water rules for the most part.
Okay.
So if it's not over appropriated, it would if it's over appropriated, if drainage is over appropriated, you can still go get an exempt well in that drainage. So exempt from the prior appropriation.
Versus if you're putting a subdivision in a community.
Exactly.
Well,
you'd have to bring water on the table.
Gotcha.
Well, it was very good.
Thank you. That's really interesting.
Yeah,
I
appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Again, if you find things that we need to know about or things, because I'm trying to get my arms about how we can use your tools as well.
That's what I look forward to, is like trying to get, again, more of it implemented into more departments and finding those efficiencies for folks.
Sounds like that staff training will be helpful in really leveraging the resources.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Come on up, ladies. Glad I'm not Eric.
Oh, my gosh.
And then coming back.
This is, I can't imagine. It looks great up on rabbit ears.
Yeah.
Chair, clear around. So we wanted to talk about the program with you all, the CPSHR study, but I was hoping we could talk about the agreement first. Stephanie, I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but Stephanie's going to be presenting that to you all. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, and I think it was attached with the documents.
Yes,
and
we received that.
I didn't know if you all had any questions about the agreement.
It was clear as mud. So far.
Perfect. That's a great start.
So I guess, maybe if you could just summarize the work for us. I know we talked about it a couple of months ago, right?
Yeah, and so this is the program plan that is in basically phase two.
Oh, yeah, this was in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So before we go into this then, so what have we already approved, and where was that supposed to get us through what we approved?
So you approved $65,000, and the $65,000 was getting us new job descriptions, and they were going to be putting them into classes. So
basically in trying to reduce them so we didn't have as many, specifically when it came to admin-type positions. So as it stands right now, basically I have reviewed about 130 jobs that we've had that they put together descriptions for, and they were not able to reduce it to the level that they thought that they were going to be able to reduce it to, because they determined that some of the admin positions really were specialized positions mm-hmm. and needed to have their own specific job description. So we have job descriptions, and we are, since I've reviewed them, I've given them some feedback on the job descriptions, very general feedback. I'd say that the biggest pieces that need to get looked at are, last time we talked about this, they had education in semesters, which I thought was kind of confusing. There's some minor wordsmithing that I spoke to them about. I think when they broke out some of the abilities and skills, some of those were pretty basic and probably could be trimmed down. But I think overall, you all thought that the classification itself seemed to be pretty thorough, even though it came out to be 3 or 4 pages for some of those descriptions.
We did talk about that.
The confusing, one of the things that has come up is they have changed the job titles a lot. And so when last...
Who has? They have.
They
CPS,
have.
HR.
Yeah, so they've made recommendations. So these are, you know, basically what we gave to them was a list of every employee that we had, what their titles were, the PDQ, and they've taken all that and they basically said, okay, based on what you provided us, here's the job description and here's the recommended title that we're giving you. And the confusing thing is some of those titles, they seem very unique to me. They don't seem like something where you could go online and say, okay, where's an equipment operator? You know, and I talked to them about that and I said, are you changing it because the job is completely changed, or why are you doing this? And they said, well, to some degree, some of the jobs changed so significantly that we wanted to change the job description. And whether that means that person would get reclassified so their salary would change, that's unclear to me. So that's kind of a big question I have. I don't know if what I said made sense to you. But
well, are you approving that change, or
well, so what's going to happen is that part of phase two is that they're going to bring all those jobs and they're going to be presenting to the department heads how they took the information from the PDQs and made a determination of, this is just a list of our people.
Yeah, just glance at it.
And how they made a decision as to why they changed the title, why that person got a separate job and they're no longer going to be an admin job. But I will tell you, based on that list there, I can't tell you if someone would actually be reclassified to the point where, like, if they went from an admin 4 to an admin 5 type of thing. I mean, for the admins, I probably could, but for some of them where they applied these unique job descriptions, I can't tell at this point. And they weren't able to... Last time I talked to them, they weren't able to give me a definitive answer about that. So that's one thing that's pending.
So get us back to my question here. So we had them doing this contract for us.
They were doing the work for us. Yep.
We at one point in time were asked about these special circumstances of a couple of the jobs, and we had discussions about that.
Yep.
And then I thought we were done and we were moving on and we were going to have a final product.
Well, part of the final product are these jobs or classifications that we're getting. And I've reviewed those. I've made minor comments to them. That is the last thing I have to get back to them, which is basically saying who's in those positions now. And we probably had probably about 10 positions that have either been completely new or changed significantly. So I'm getting that back to them, and then that's when they're gonna complete the final piece
of the first contract.
of the first contract.
And so now tell me why we need to have this second
contract. So the second piece is helping us understand how they made the decisions they made. There wasn't a report that's included in phase one. So there, we were just going to get all the materials back and they were going to go here. It wasn't going to be a situation where they were going to be explaining their decisions.
So we pay them $12,000 for their work product or what?
Say that again?
Well, I mean, seems like they were, I mean, why wasn't that included in their first part of their contract?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't part of the first contract, but I think they were trying to keep costs down, and I don't necessarily think that there was going to be a level of complexity to it where we would need that. I also think that, you know, if human resources had the manpower to be more involved in the process, then we could have probably worked more closely and maybe had that had a relationship where we would have a better understanding of that to be able to explain it. But phase two isn't just getting that report. Phase two is being able to pretty much do an orientation, come back to the department heads and say, you know, here's the report, here's how we made these decisions. They're going to reach out to the individual employees about those changes that were made to their positions to help them better understand it. And I think one of the examples I gave last time I was here is that a number of people think that they supervise individuals because they provide... So I think that there's a number of those factors that are included in this that it's nice to have that third party to be able to explain that situation and take all these individuals through an orientation and then have one-on-ones with the individuals who are confused about why their job is changing or why they're not in a higher position. And also, I believe that they will help manage that just because it's changed doesn't mean the money's going to change at this point in time.
I don't know. I guess I don't have any different options, but it seems like we're getting paid here and paying them twice do what they originally proposed to do.
Well, one was doing the work. One is helping individuals to understand the implementation of it. And we did, it may not make it feel any better, but we did take $19,000 plus of money that we were going to use for other services of theirs to apply it to this because we felt it would be greater value added to be able to have them help us through this implementation process.
About the staffing time.
Staffing time, and I think that since they carried out the work, I think that they have the skill set to be able to really provide details about how they made the decisions that they made and recommendations that they made.
So what's going to be the appeals process here anyhow? So, and then I appeal to them?
Good question.
And then where's the buck stop? The buck stop probably doesn't stop at us.
I think the buck will stop with this team as far as, and I think that it depends on what the rationale is and if it's going to be minutia or there's going to be real concrete reasons to make those change or to appeal the job description or the language in the job description.
I don't mean to give you a hard time, Kathy. I'm just trying to get my arm around this thing.
No, that's okay.
It just seems like it just keeps continuing to snowball here, and I'm a little bit disappointed that we're not into a place already, not you or whatever, but, you know, that we don't already have, you know, what we should be having and should be already putting into place.
Well, if anyone's at fault, it's going to be me because I have had the ability to review all the job descriptions probably as quickly as I should.
And sign off on them evidently then? Or?
I have to, yeah, so I review them, I have to send them back, I give them feedback on it, and now I'm at the point where I have to just make sure. I mean, we've probably had about 45 changes to occupations when it comes from a people standpoint. And so because they're going to be reaching out to people and they want to have a kind of a nice touch point, we want to make sure that we have the right people listed in those occupations. And with the turnover, you know, I've been updating that as well. And I do think I do think the product is good. I think that it's, they're very consistent. I like the format. I think that when it comes to an individual receiving that, it'll be very clear as to what the roles, their role is and what the expectations are. And I think for recruiting and things of that nature, you know, writing a job posting will probably summarize some of what's in there and not include the whole thing. But from a performance management standpoint, I think it provides some really concrete information. I also think it provides very thorough description for salary surveys.
So how did they come up with the number here that they come up with, the 15,400 and 1,600 and 14,400? And I mean, without even knowing how many people are going to appeal the process or whatever anyhow. So
how
do we wing a number in here?
I did not ask them how they came up with that. My guess is that it's going to be based on their, you know, how things have happened historically when they've done this type of work, the number of people that we have, the number of, you know, job descriptions. They may look and say, well, we know that these 20 positions are changing, so we can anticipate that those individuals in those occupations may want to, you know, need an extra touch. I certainly can ask them if you'd like me to know how they came up with the bid.
Is this a flat fee no matter how much time it takes them?
It is a flat fee. I mean, if we change the scope of the work, but the way that it says it's...
But I guess I meant it wouldn't change, like, if there were three people who appealed versus 25 people who appealed, they would charge it.
I certainly would ask. I would go back and say, look, we only had three people appeal. You hardly spent any time on this. Some of the cost that's included in this as well is travel. So if we don't feel that they need to come out for that, then that would probably save us a couple thousand dollars as well. But right now I wanted it included that they would come out here and physically be present.
Seems like the travel expenses are minimal. And I remember when we talked about this before, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just you have to expect that people are resistant to change, and we really have to make sure that we're not creating a shitstorm, excuse the French, when this is... rolled out to people.
Cure a shitstorm either. So
well, better than us.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think it will be. I think it will be us anyhow.
Well, they'll understand it, I guess, is the point.
I think they can probably better articulate it. So, for example, I probably brought this up last time too, but one of the department heads had asked me about a position. It was an admin position, and I said, well, you know, this person will probably be in the same category as this person because they're doing this type of work. And the first thing they said is, well, my person's doing way more work.
Oh, a lot more important than that one.
And so I think
we know all about that.
So I think that part of this is to get them to maybe take that on and be the first line of
just explaining it and saying, here's, we looked at it and here's the comparison.
Yeah.
Well, I'm one of those guys that likes to see tasks finished and done. These guys have not impressed me about the continuation and the continuation and whether, again, I know that part of your department too and being understaffed and the rest, but I just want to see the thing done and get it off of our plate. One of those things that we get off of our plate. So I can't judge whether the $16,000. And back, you originally, you said you started off with this comment. So how much was our original contract for with them?
$65,000.
And they'd asked for more than that at that point in time, or something? We'd have some conversations
about
that.
Right, we did talk about that because there were some temporary and seasonal positions.
No,
there were 13
aside from that,
the
too. But we actually went out for an RFP on this, did we not? We had three or four responses that we RFQ'd or something.
Did we RFP on this?
Yeah, we did.
I don't know that we did.
I think we did. We had three or four firms that we're looking at.
Well,
again, I just want to make sure we're getting our bang for the buck out of these guys, and I appreciate the travel and the time we spend listening to her ding chimes on the telephone. We're all good with that. While she's sitting at the beach, it's all good. The waves wash it up.
Don't worry, she billed us for that time.
I know. I do think that the product. I wasn't part of the bidding out process, so I don't know who else bid on it or the caliber of those organizations, but. Having this final product is huge for us. It's huge for the HR department from a number of standpoints, and they look good. They look good. It's consistent. It's
well, I like to hear that from you, because now if you look at the 65 and you add 14 on it, or 16, whatever, so now we're looking at basically close to $80,000.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money to throw out here.
But I will tell you, and Stephanie can probably back me up on this, but if you go into our electronic folders of job descriptions, they're all over the place based on who created it, and how many.
I don't doubt that a bit either, Kathy. So, I don't doubt that.
Historically, I think Chris in 2014 had tried to update them all, but they just kept coming in piecemeal, and as they come in piecemeal, people are updating them, and then Tom has to, sign off on them, and so I feel like right now they're all the same. They're all formatted the same. They're logical, and I really think it's a valuable product, but I get it. It's a lot of money.
I think, Doug's point, it does feel like it's the project has gotten stretched out, and I understand what you're saying about capacity within your department, and it's just a little confusing. Like, isn't this what we paid for in the first place? And I get that. And in the end, we're going to have to back these guys up. Appeals process and whatever, that's going to be great, but we're going to have to say, no, what they said is what's happening.
What part of no didn't you understand?
Yeah, so
can't
we have
to mama when daddy said no.
We have to be able to feel that we trust that the product they're producing is high quality and that we should be backing them up, mm-hmm. right? So,
which I appreciate, because that's really key.
Right. We don't have much of a choice. Unless we really want to take the shitstorm.
I think there's times when you guys have questioned. I think maybe the last salary survey, there was a little hinging on that.
I wasn't there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, everybody's got a special circumstance. I'm quite familiar with them. No, that just like you said, my employee does that. Oh, so much more than that employee does.
What I appreciate about this, though, is it's all being done at once, and so we know, to your point, there's a consistent approach, and that makes it easier to back it up, right? To say everyone's job was looked at and evaluated in depth. We paid $80,000 to make sure that happened. These guys know how to do it, and so we're not. Right.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you a hard enough time.
Well, Stephanie's going to be here tomorrow.
We wanted to talk about it today.
So that, because she hasn't been included in this project work, so she'd be a little bit blindsided in the process.
Well,
so,
just get ready. Tim, who knows what Tim will come up with to ask you tomorrow.
And you're lucky that he wasn't here today. So you'll get his tomorrow.
We'll tell him
it's all right.
And part of the implementation, too, is for human resources and what they recommend for the best practices so we can be gatekeepers.
Absolutely. Since we have a new final product, we don't want to just be incrementally undercutting it later.
Right. And that's going to be a big change too, which they're going to be bringing up to supervisors and department heads, that you can't just willy-nilly.
Well, it's just like GIS. You can't just having the product. You can't just cut away from it. And pretty soon we're back in the same boat we were
before
we started the whole process. So.
So the only question I have on this task list here, I see Deanna listed. This is our Deanna?
No.
Oh, okay.
Deanna she's our project manager.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, you're going to make Deanna present this? That's a terrible idea. Got it. That's way better.
I just didn't know if somehow she ended up the project manager without my, without me knowing. Well, we've been working on transition planning, right? And we've been working on assigning tasks to people. I didn't know if I missed something.
She did want to do some work in human resources.
Yeah, so but maybe not this. This doesn't seem like a good dipping her toe in the water.
Why not kick it off?
Throw her to the wolves.
Exactly.
Okay. What HR is really like.
Yeah. I'm glad I asked.
Now you have health insurance.
Okay, thank you for that.
So I guess my question, so we kind of think, and again, since you're here and whatever, we kind of think we're going to have this, you know, to be determined, but we're somewhere into the May 18th?
Yeah, and actually that's not what I had wanted, so I'm trying to push them forward so it can be completed sooner, but they said May. So, and I'm also working with... I wanted to talk. I'm going to shift gears here, and you guys can maybe not want to go down this track, but this is very obviously, this is first stage one, and then the salary survey is the next piece.
Yeah.
And
we can
we know that.
Yeah, yep. We know about it.
One of the things that I think we've talked about is, do we want to do, you know, instead of doing an RFP, you know, could this be like a, what do you guys call it, a sole source piece, and I talked a little bit to Deanna about how, what their process
Deanna
is.
Hain. Yeah, Deanna got it. I got it.
Deanna.
Deanna. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that Deanna and Deanna's confused.
That'll make it easier.
That's a memory thing.
Yeah. I talked to her a little bit about what their process is for doing a salary survey, because I wanted to find out what kind of timeline it is and what that looks like, and because I'm very interested in also having employers' council look at this, because right now there's just been there was a change in laws where pay transparency is required now, and so there's a lot of businesses that are making sure their job descriptions are up to snuff, and employers' council has been doing a program of, we'll look at your job descriptions, we can look at your salary, yada yada, and so I'm interested in talking to them. And when I brought up Employers Council, Deanna had said, oh, we do a completely different process than them. And I said, well, I'm not asking you to provide a bid at this point because I can't.
Because if we do go out for an RFP,
right,
then they wouldn't be able to.
No, I don't know if we want to go out for an RFP because the RFP locks in the price so much,
right,
too.
Right.
I think we want to go out for an RFQ or something like that, too.
Yeah,
think about that.
Huh?
RFI?
RFQ is... price certain, RFP is more open-ended.
Or an RFI?
Right? Yeah.
What is, why request for proposal? That means,
yeah, but
price.
Request for quotation, you know, so like the RFQ, you have a price in mind, and it's, can you meet that price? RFP is a proposal, so how would you accomplish the work?
So we didn't have such good luck at the last salary survey, so.
I know.
Kind of,
what happened that was problematic?
I don't know.
Besides the numbers being higher than what you wanted,
they weren't. They were lower. I think.
There okay.
Some discrepancy in the analysis that they used their own
equal
formula.
Jobs as well.
Yeah, they used their own formula to come up with pay scales, which really made us do a lot of extra work after that.
I see.
Well, that's where, I mean, what you're talking about with the interesting job titles or whatever. I mean, unique, I think was your word. I mean, that was the intent of this work. So if they're not providing you with work that you can prepare, you know, it's
to
not.
Get rid of them.
Well, I've talked to them about it, and one of the things that I didn't want to get caught up in wordsmithing and the job titles at this point in time. So I said, let's keep moving forward. It's not, at this point in time, it's not worth holding up on the job titles because we're going to have an appeal process. And my guess is the department heads, you know, why should I try and figure out a title I think is going to be the best fit when the department heads are probably going to come in and they're going to have another perspective. So I thought it could all
be comparable.
Done at
that
once.
That was the whole point of the salary survey, that,
yeah,
that you've got positions that can be compared across,
right,
other organizations.
Well, we hoped. That's what,
well, that's
that was the intent.
That's
yes. That's what we went down this path,
right,
for sure.
And I feel like we'll tighten that up during the appeals process.
Well, I just worry if you're going to let department heads reinvent those titles, mm-hmm. then that negates the work.
And part of the goal is to have job titles that are comparable for the purpose of a salary survey and get rid of these unique as much as possible.
Right.
So, well, I can certainly say I want them to clean that up before the department heads get to it then, because I find that some of them are, you know, if I, you know, I went out and I Googled some of those titles and
you'd never find anything.
It's just
like it.
It's just kind of one-offs. It's not. And I need to have a further conversation with
them.
We're
all so special.
I know.
We are really special.
I know.
But at the same point in time, I don't know, when do you think, I mean, the salary survey, we didn't budget any money for that.
Yeah, we budgeted $27,000.
Just to do the survey.
The salary survey?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to be involved in the selection. I've been on 3 or 4 of them. 2 here in the River District and the Upper Yampa. And one of them, the Mountain States did a great job, and one of Mountain States did a poor job.
I will
dependent upon who did it from Mountain States.
That's exactly.
And comparable ended up being running 5 guys to running 250 people. That was a comparable in one of the surveys.
Say that again. They only like used 5 to benchmark it.
A comparable with a job description was their job description, but it didn't monitor how many people they were supervising and how many were under control of them.
So they didn't look into the details of the job?
No, uh-uh.
Yeah, I mean, I've...
So they compared Denver Water, for instance, to Mount Warner Water, that kind of situation. I mean, servicing 5 million people mm-hmm. versus servicing, you know, 10,000 people. And it was those kind of big gross errors that were made during one of those salary surveys, I'll guarantee you. It was crazy.
Well, and I have your same perspective. I mean, I did a salary survey once with Employers Council, and I did not like the process. I did not like the person I worked with. I did not like the results of it. But at the same time, I feel like they also know our market pretty well. They also would be easy if we were going to continue to do them to throw it out to them. If they did a good job the first time, to throw it out to them and have them update it every 2 years or how often, you know, whatever the frequency is. With Employers Council.
Not 2 years, no.
I mean, with Employers Council, or not Employers Council, with CPSHR, while they've been intimately involved in understanding our job descriptions, I also question, do they know our market to the degree that we want them, you know, we would want them to? And while supposedly the data is out there and they can get the data, I do think that there's some nuances that fall into place that maybe would lend them to not have all the knowledge they would need.
So your question about possibly using CPSHR for the
salary survey
is mostly about being able to get it done more quickly?
No.
Given the time frame they're giving
no,
us?
No, it's about understanding our market. I mean, they're really more of a California-based organization, uh-huh. and so there's a little bit of a slant on how they do their work based on the fact that they've operated mostly out of California. Now, they have been building a base here in Colorado, and I think it's strengthening, but to some degree, even with this process, when I questioned something, somebody said, well, that's kind of how they do it in California. I was like, well, that's not good enough. That's a little bit of a miss for us. What?
Deanna's, your project manager, is Colorado, and her experience is Colorado. That's the part I'm struggling with a little bit.
Well, she was the one who had said, you know, when I said to her, I think that this is a miss on this particular area, she said, well, I think that's probably because California does it a specific way and we can adjust that. So they'll make accommodations, but I think depending upon where, you know, the consultants are located and what the work is they're used to doing it, I think that sometimes it... That's my concern. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but...
I'm just saying you've got local project manager. You've got, I think, I can't remember the other woman's name, who's also local.
Angela.
So, I mean, you've got Colorado people involved in this, best I can tell.
We do, but I'm just letting you know that that's a concern of mine.
Okay.
I mean, just, but Employers Council, I have concerns with them too, because like you said, it's not always perfect. It is dependent upon, do you have the right person working on the project?
So it sounds like we probably do want to go out for an RFP for the salary survey then.
I think we
given what you're telling us about the pros and cons of working with different organizations.
Very refined questions, interview questions about how they're going to handle it. Operating on it. So, yeah.
Well, and so then is that potentially pushing it back a bit because of this timeline?
Yeah, that would push it back because the RFP is a lengthy process in itself. I felt pretty comfortable selecting between Employers Council and CPSHR. I would just to kind of bounce both approaches off and make a determination. I think I'd feel comfortable with that, but certainly we can try another consultant or see what else comes in. But it will lengthen the process, you know, 6 or 8 weeks, I would think.
I mean, is there any reason we couldn't start an RFP process now?
Well, I think that we can start an RFP.
I mean, you don't have the job descriptions.
But an RFP for a salary survey?
Well, if they're going to do the salary survey, they have to have it based on something, right? And sure, it'll take a while to get that done, but I don't know where we are getting those job descriptions ready. So the data's not there, and they're going to have to figure out.
I mean, well, she's not done until May.
Yeah, I think we need to get this done myself, too. But
I mean, you can definitely do it ahead of it being done, but it's got to be date certain done, right?
Got
so
it.
That they can.
I see.
You're going to want to respond to that. You know what I mean? Like as a bidder, you're going to want to see the data that it's based
okay.
on. Okay. Well, you guys have met with Deanna. I mean, we met with her once,
yeah,
and that's it. So
she's great.
I just want to get this process done.
Yeah, she's very thoughtful too. So.
She's great. She's very accommodating, and I think. I'm waiting for her to give me some examples of what work they've done for others related to carrying out this work and what the process is. And again, I specifically said, don't bid on this. It's not about us. Just give me some examples because I want to see how your approach is different from Employers Council and what the result looks like. And so she's supposed to be getting that information to me, and I think that will help us better understand what result we could potentially expect from them.
Well, I'd rather not sole source it, but I'd like to move it along. We've committed to the employees that we are going to have a solid
right.
service.
Is there a process that could be more? I get confused with all the purchasing acronyms and the timelines. I mean, I'm sort of looking at Dan because he's the one who tells us the rules about this all the time. But is there a process that could be more like what Kathy is talking about, that, you know, where we are looking at a few options, but we don't have to put out a full RFP process?
Yes, because that
that's
would
a little
be really
shorter.
Great.
I mean,
we did target.
I mean, you would send your RFP out. I mean, that would be the process.
And what's the minimum timeline for that kind of a process?
60 days.
Yeah.
You know, you're not able to do an RFQ, you know, because you really don't, I think, want to be wedded to the price.
Mm-hmm.
You want to understand the process. And
I want to understand the price, the process.
Yes.
Yes. And then what goes into the
and
price.
The validity of it.
Exactly.
And the reasoning and the background.
Right. So the RFP process is really the way to do that. Otherwise, you're just getting information and you're not able to make a decision for like an RFI. It's a request for information.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd have to do an RFP anyway.
After
so,
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It sort of just adds time to the process.
It's 60 days?
That's from beginning to end for an RFP process to that's what
in an hour
best practices.
Selection.
Yeah.
So maybe as we get closer to a date certain on this, we can revisit again and just see if we're ready to do it. Because, I mean, my bias is to follow the appropriate processes. And I understand that we want to try to get this done to have it. But there's a transparency issue with just saying, well, we wanted to move faster. So we
so we
just did what was easy. You know, I think that would be my concern.
Okay. I'm fine with that. And I think at the next meeting I might have more information both from Employers Council and from CPSHR so that we can take a look at that and you can get some perspective at least on the two different approaches.
Well,
So, yeah, let's... I was going to ask, do you have money in your budget for this, or is this going to require a supplemental budget as well?
Nope, I have money in my budget.
For this...
Huh? We budgeted it, I think. Yeah.
This phase two?
Yep.
Because we talked about it during the budget process. Okay.
Well,
now we just have a little more.
For the survey,
get her done.
I have money for the... Yeah.
That's the key. Get it done.
Try not to change anyone's job title.
No.
Anything else?
Oh, we're getting
no.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, no, I did have a question for you, yes. So we got the email back from you regarding Tim's
thing. Yeah, the direct
We path. Need to have some conversation about that whole thing. Not today, but so.
Sure, it's a benefit thing.
So I don't know whether you want to schedule
I have one other question before we skip to that because I have a note here. So at one point, Tom came to me and said we wanted to do certain positions where there's an equipment operator, one, two, or three. And I will say that I did have a conversation with CPSHR. Does this ring a bell to you guys?
Yes. It rings a bell, but I don't think we ever decided we wanted to do that.
I didn't want to have an equipment operator, one, two, or three.
That process would look like.
This was in regards to the conversation about the salary, the steps, and a different way we could think about doing that. I'm kind of inclined to not. I mean, oh my God. Wouldn't that be a whole other can of worms?
Yeah. Well, at this point in time, we have certain positions that are going to be, you know, planner one, two, or three.
Right.
We're also going to have positions where there's going to be an associate, and then there's going to be a mid-level, and then there's going to be a senior level. So even if it's not one, two, and three, we're still going to have that range.
You have the appraisers, one, two, and three.
Right. Yeah, so there are some positions.
Yeah, but we
positions.
Have certain criteria for them.
That's right. Then they have
and then they have to, yeah, they have to be. So the difference between planner one, two, or three, or assessor one, two, three, is more beauty.
Well,
right now it is.
It should be written into the classification. Right?
It should be
written. Documented.
That's right.
Yeah,
but the question when it came up was of whether we wanted to incorporate that in the way we were dealing with our steps. And
yes.
I guess, honestly, it seems like it would be a big can of worms to just go back and do that.
Well, if we've got the classifications, we just post the classifications in a range, right? That's not necessarily adding any more work to what we already have. If we have the planner one, two, and three, for instance, and you're just hiring a planner, then you post one, two, and three as saying we will hire the appropriate person, and based on the experience you get, then you slot them into that at a not to exceed step five. So that's sort of the way to get the most experience from the department standpoint and not exceed step five in hiring too. So you know, you can decide if you're.
So we need to have a longer conversation.
Okay,
definitely.
That's what I just wanted to because they had said something to me about that in the beginning, and I had said, nope, don't want to be. You know, specifically when it came to the admins, and I said we don't want to have admin ones and twos because we're not going to pay them enough for them to even be
that's
able
right,
to live here and work.
Brand.
So I kind of shut down that process. So when Tom brought it up to me, I went, oh, we better talk about this.
But it was really as a matter of thinking about the salary scale and how we could have a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? Of like a career ladder for people, and we could.
I think the most, I guess, maybe salient comment that I heard came from Eric Canals and hiring a new attorney that may be right out of law school.
He could do that in the job description in his job title now.
Right.
Well, we don't have separate job titles for the assistant county attorney.
So, but he could ask for one.
Yeah, he could have several different job titles for different levels of attorneys. And once they get to X number of years and X level of experience, then he'd be able to promote them to a higher level position is what he's thinking.
I mean, that's what we do with...
Do you remember when we had the guy out of Summit County, I think, came here for a young guy, came here for a very short period of time, and Eric, and then Eric would have loved to just been able to have a salary for him that was lower and for.
But why can't we do that with the current?
And that's what we're.
I don't want to get into equipment operators 1, 2, or 3, especially when they all need CDLs and all need similar. They all need to be able to operate everything. So
I was just throwing out an example, but yes, we can. I mean, from my perspective, we would just add a job description that had, you know, fewer years of experience requirements, or, you know, the complexity of their job wasn't to the degree that, you know, a senior attorney or, you know, Eric's job would be.
Could that be something that we would consider as jobs are open, if it makes sense, rather than trying to do a blanket across the board?
Well, let's figure that out. Kind of like this thing that we got stuck in with Kevin when he hired on his fire, you know, thing. So then we hire him in at step 9, you know. So we should have done something different with that one, too. We should have changed the job description and changed his responsibility levels and to it allowed for something of that versus hiring him in at step 9, in my opinion.
The problem with doing that, I agree with you, actually, is doing it retroactively.
Oh, I understand. You know,
so
I understand.
It's like posting the job, you know, at a
absolutely
range, right?
Yep.
So you might get better candidates.
And you know, we sit back here and say, well, you know, we want to hire the best person we can get, but we need 3 people of planner fours, you know, planner threes and fours? No, we don't.
Right.
I mean, we got simple jobs that we need to have those people in the lower pay range in there too, gaining experiences as well.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So it sounds like maybe something to just have more conversation about whether it makes sense.
Or if we can be proactive about it, I think it's great. But I don't necessarily think we need to revamp our whole program to accommodate some of those positions.
We're just finishing up getting this
done. I think
we're in agreement.
Okay.
That. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go back to direct path.
So I think we really just wanted to schedule a time to talk about the program.
Have Tim here and I think we need to all understand this a little bit more.
And I think that it would make sense for us to have Hayes on the phone.
I think so too. I wasn't very comfortable with what they reported back to us. I mean, what the hell? Who's managing this thing? So it's like, really? So I don't even know what Tim, you know, we know what Tim got based on the letter that he sent you guys. And so it's like, really? Was that computed correctly even?
Right.
But I think the short version is we need to schedule a time to talk about that.
Yeah,
right.
And figure out what we want
to
do with that program.
And we need to have Hayes or subject matter experts on the phone who really can delve into it and understand it better. I'll be honest, I'm not going to be your subject matter expert as to why the quotes come back that way.
It's a misnomer to think that we are getting comparisons of apples to apples, because we are not.
Right.
Yeah.
We are not getting comparisons that are apples to apples. So
yep.
That's the challenge.
Okay.
Thanks.
Are we done? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.